B-Pod Studios.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Now, because the Phillies are in play currently, taking on the Atlanta Braves in the final game of the three-game series, looking to take the series with a 2-1 advantage in this one. So we'll see how it all plays out this afternoon as they are up right now 1-0 in the fifth with two men on base as we speak. So we will rejoin television on the television side once the game goes final with their post-game coverage and all on NBC Sports Philadelphia. But you do have us for about 2 hours, I'm guessing, maybe a little bit less than 2 hours to talk a lot of football, some baseball. We'll get into some basketball stuff as well. We'll always have fun with our side topics. And at the top of the show, I want to let you know that at 4 o'clock, we will be having our training camp report, our first of the 2022 season, where Tim McManus of ESPN.com and 97.5 The Fanatic will join us at 4 p.m. to discuss the first day of camp on the field. Only 58 minutes of field work for the Philadelphia Eagles, and that's bothering a lot of people that they're not getting a lot of work in, so we'll talk about that. And then at 4:30, we will be joined by Jason Stark of The Athletic to talk about the Phillies, hopefully a victory today in taking this series. Trade deadline and so much more. I'm Devon Givens again with you until 6 o'clock. Tyler Zuli is here as well as we hang out with you this Wednesday afternoon, where it's back to being warm outside. But let's begin with the Eagles, with what we heard today from Nick Sirianni and what he had to say about the football team. First day of practice, he took the field after, you know, he spoke a little bit earlier in the 9 o'clock hour heading into 10 o'clock. And the one thing that stood out again to me with Nick Sirianni as he spoke today and talked about the football team and their chances this season as they get underway for his second season and how things are different the first time around. I mean, the second time around after having that first one, it's really interesting to see and monitor, not only on the phones talking to Connor Thomas and Tom Alvord during the midday show. Great hearing those guys out there here today. But it was, again, about folks and what they have to say about the head coach. It's really it's always interesting, again, to just listen and sit back and hear people talk about him and get so frustrated by him and what he is doing, how he's going about it out there as a head coach, how he speaks, the way he does it. It doesn't fit the narrative of Philadelphia. He doesn't really give you much to go off of as a head coach to feel comfortable out there as a head coach. And that seems to be a lot of the case for so many people. And I wonder, is that really where you are as a fan of the Philadelphia Eagles, where it really just starts to bother you about Nick Sirianni and who he is? Why does it seem that he's bothering people so much? Now, he is a different cat. I will say that. He's a different dude. He's not the same as what we're accustomed to. He's not even, right? He's not Doc Rivers. He's not Rob Thompson. He's not any of these people. But what he is a guy out there doing his job and feeling like he's a player's coach right now in this new era of football, if you will, a player's coach. And it bothers a lot of people. It really does bother a lot of people that you have to sit here and hear him talk about, you know, the gardening and these cliches of so many other things and mountains, apparently, what he was talking about today and having that stuff. The other thing with people that bothers them is the fact that he also goes out there and he wears the T-shirts with the players on them, whether it's Brandon Graham when he goes down. Today, it was, Jalen Hurts today, and that's what you have to deal with him. And that's something that we all just going to have to simply get used to. We're going to have to get used to this as we deal with this head coach, because that's who he is. And I thought at the end, while you want to be able to connect, I thought at the end the bottom line was this: to simply win football games. Well, as different as he may be, as weird as he may be, to a lot of people trying to get used to and get comfortable with having Nick Sirianni as your head coach, they won last season. They didn't win the Super Bowl. That's the ultimate goal. We know that. But they were rebuilding. We didn't expect them to make the postseason last year, but they did. And with that, I think that we wanted to talk today and start off, what do you want from Nick Sirianni? Like yesterday we did the Jalen Hurts part of it, and since he spoke today and so many people again got on him, what do you want? Honestly, what do you want from Nick Sirianni in order for you to accept him as the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles? Because in the end, it's about winning. And he does some things that seem cool. Yes, it's a little different that he may have the, what does he have? The basketball court inside the press conference room at NovaCare. And he's talking about having draftees, potential draftees, come into their room. And instead of really talking football, they're talking about this. And they're playing Nerf basketball. And he wants to see how competitive they are and what drives them to be competitive and all that seriousness that he has out there. He is a different guy. We have to get used to this different cat. And in the end, as long as he wins, why does that matter? Really, why does that matter? What is it that you really want from Nick Sirianni that's keeping you from supporting him as the Philadelphia Eagles head coach, where you sit back? And look, I'll be honest. Sometimes he says stuff and I'm sitting back like, okay, all right. Okay, cool. All right, great. But it's not something I expect from the head coach. But it seems that people are really like, all right, I've had enough of this guy. I'm sick of this guy. He's too cartoonish with what he is doing out there and speaking to the media. And that's a problem for a lot of people at this stage of his career now as the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. But when I thought the bottom line was simply to win football games, I know you want to connect. I want to connect with the head coach as well. I want to connect. I talk about Doc Rivers where he's not my favorite. I talk about, we talk about Jim Curtin so much with the Philadelphia Union, where he seemed like he connects more as a Philadelphia, and I know Tyler Zuli is here. He hates this thing, the Philadelphia guy. But Nick Sirianni, does he kind of give you maybe that he's like a Philadelphia guy a little bit because he's a little zany, maybe he goes a little offbeat and off the beaten path of what you are supposed to get from an NFL coach, but he gives you something a little bit different. A little bit different. And I want to know why it's bothering people so much that you're dealing with this guy, but you don't love the guy. You're not really liking the guy. He's not your kind of guy. What are you expecting from him? What is now, like we did with Jalen Hurts yesterday, what is keeping you from accepting Nick Sirianni? He's not going anywhere for at least a couple of seasons. He did his job last season where he got you into the postseason. We didn't expect it, but he got you there. This year he comes back. The one thing that I do respect about him, he's doing exactly what he did last year. He's being the same kind of guy. Shouldn't we also look at the adapting of what he did last season? If we are to believe that when the run game became a big thing for the Philadelphia Eagles in the second half of the season, and they won, and it changed the complexion of the campaign, and they got into the postseason, and we then find out later that it wasn't him that changed things, changed the game plan since he was the offensive coordinator. When they were doing things as the offensive coordinator, it wasn't him. It didn't work, right? It didn't work. Well, guess what? We found out later on that Shane Steichen, he was the one that did it, not Nick Sirianni. And shouldn't we be giving Nick Sirianni credit for saying that, all right, whatever I was doing as the head coach, it wasn't working. Whatever I was doing, it was not working. So as a result, I do need to lean on my offensive coordinator in title and allow him to possibly go out there and make the necessary changes that are needed there for us all in order for us to win. Shouldn't we be looking at that too, where we give him credit for that? Now, I get on him because of stuff where I have this personal thing against Derek Barnett. And I'll say, dude, You bring this guy back, may not have been in your call, may have been the Howie Roseman. It could have been It could have been your defensive coordinator and Jonathan Gannon, but he's back. And with him being back, I have to look at the head coach. You are the one that mouthed, that we all saw, it's always him. Well, why'd you bring him back? Why didn't you simply say, get that guy out of here, I can't deal with that anymore? Well, one thing we do know is, again, that he's a player's coach, and they seem to really, 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 really take to him. We hear the leaders talk about it. We hear the quarterback talk about it. They have a cool handshake, he and the quarterback, all that stuff. They seem to like him. Why can't we? Why can't we accept him, especially if he's doing his job and finding ways to win football games for this football, this Philadelphia Eagles team? 610-632-0975. Devon Givens with you on 97.5 The Fanatic, only until the Phillies are done. At some point right now, a 3-0 lead in the fifth with two guys on right now in the fifth with two outs as well, one out as well. So we'll join the TV side a little bit later. But right now, you only have us on the radio side. We will talk Phillies, of course, and we'll hear from Tim McManus at 4 o'clock. We'll hear from Jason Stark at 4:30. We'll have Phillies and Eagles covered. But on the radio side right now, we wanted to start off with you and just simply ask you, what is it that you need to see from Nick Sirianni to accept him as a Philadelphia, as a Philadelphian leading your team in year one? However they did it, they did it. They got to the postseason. We didn't expect that. So what else do you want from the guy? Already, it's back to his weird press conference from his introduction to some of the other weird things he says about growing plants and things of that nature during the season. And now we're talking about mountains, and already we're looking at him with his Jalen Hurts t-shirt on, supporting his quarterback, and we're frowning at the head coach once again. What do you want from the guy? 610-632-0975. I'm Devon Givens. This is the afternoon show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zuli is here as well. We're hanging out with you until 6. Join us.
97.5 The Fanatic.
The Fanatic, 610-632-0975. It's the afternoon show here on this Wednesday. The 2 o'clock hour is brought to you by Ferguson HVAC, Lyon Conklin. Attention HVAC contractors, for equipment, parts, and supplies for every heating and cooling job, visit one of Ferguson's counter locations in Bensalem, King of Prussia, Pennsauken, or Westchester today. Again, check them out, HVAC Lyon Conklin. And we also have to get to our Twitter poll, as I expect this game is going to be a pretty interesting one, as it's 5-2 now, home run by the Atlanta Braves. Tyler Zuli, we have to get to our Twitter poll as well, as we are with you until 6 o'clock in the 2 o'clock hour. Twitter poll powered by Paul B. Moyer and Sons in Doylestown, PA. Men, it's almost mower time before you crack open a cold one and obsessively manicure your lawn. Make sure you stay hydrated. Schedule mower maintenance at poweredbymoyer.com. All right, there are the horns.
Yes.
So that means it's time for the Twitter poll.
Yeah, if I can read.
Good afternoon.
I couldn't read my update, so we'll see how this goes. Our Twitter poll today is, do you 100% feel comfortable with Nick Sirianni as the Eagles head coach heading into 2022? So far, a little over 100 votes on this one, and two-thirds of the vote, 67%, say yes. 30% say not yet, need to see more. Just 3% say no.
All right, 610-632-0975. We appreciate that. How do you feel before we start things off with Eric and Mike and Brett and everybody else that's there? How do you feel? Do you think it's fair? You've seen him just like I've seen him. He just had his first press conference of the football season.
Sure.
And once again, they're coming down on him again.
Yeah, listen, I think the answer to this question is yes. Do I feel like he's in the upper echelon of coaches? Like, I'm not going to sit here and try to compare him to Bill Belichick or Mike Tomlin or you know, guys that have been in key spots. Even some of the younger coaches, Sean McVay. I think Matt LaFleur is a really good coach, even though the Packers have struggled. Kyle Shanahan. You notice who I didn't include on that list?
Cliff Kingsbury.
Yes, because I think he stinks.
McCarthy.
However, I do think that he is not a hindrance to this team. He's not a detriment to the Eagles at this point. His ability to kind of flip the script, and obviously that was a necessity because of how things were progressing throughout the season, but his ability to flip the script at the play calling level, his ability to flip the script at the game script level, mm-hmm. was telling to me that he's willing to make adjustments. He's not, you know, ramming his head against the proverbial brick wall and saying, I'm doing it my way, I'm doing it my way, I'm doing it my way, which gives me good confidence that he's not Chip Kelly. And I know that that's a super low threshold to get to, but it gives me some kind of confidence in him going forward. So heading into year two, for a guy that made the playoffs, for a team that overachieved, for a guy that has a lot of weapons and a lot of tools at his disposal, yeah, I do feel comfortable. Do I think that he's great? Not yet. I'm not ready to go there, but I do feel comfortable with him as the head coach heading into his second year, for sure.
Yep, I do too, until he shows us why he isn't, and he is not there yet, so I'm good with him. Yeah, he's a little bit different, and he's not, you know, you look at it, and again, when you look at a head coach, you say, you want him to be, let's say, the adult in the room. Well, a lot of times adults are a little bit different. Sometimes adults still have that kid in them. And sometimes adults read, especially as a coach, they read what's going on in their locker room and he sees fit of how to go about his business with his football team. And that's how he sees it necessary right now for the Philadelphia Eagles and how to handle that locker room with a bunch of veterans, but also with a bunch of young players in there as well. And he sees this is the way that he needs to go about his business as a head coach of a professional football team. Why is it that we are so hard on him? And where are you as far as Nick Sirianni goes? 610-632-0975. Everybody, stay hydrated out there. Let's go up to the phones. Let's start things off with Eric in Philly, leading things off for us on 97.5 The Fanatic this afternoon. Eric, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, Levon?
What's up, B? How you been, man?
Yeah, man, I've been good. So we're talking about Nick Sirianni. Honestly, I really don't care about the head coach as long as we win games. But the one thing I don't like about Nick, especially last season, the Raider game really sticks out to me. And not the Raiders game, my fault. The Cowboys game, the first one, where we just kept passing and passing and passing. Like, that right there, man, like, come on now. You can't, as the head coach, especially at that time, I believe he was play calling. Yeah, that really does, it left a spot. I can't forget about that, man. Like, you can't do that, man. We pass the ball, like, every time, and we weren't doing nothing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yep.
And when we hired him as a young head coach, like, we're not hiring you based on merit. You know, we hiring you based on hopefully like something unique, whether it's a unique offense, a unique play caller, you know, something good. Like Sean McVay, he a good play caller. Like Zach Taylor from the Bengals, like he a good his offensive scheme is good. You know. Like, I don't know why we hired him in the first place.
So you don't see, so you're looking at it like this with him, where what does he do well?
Exactly. What does he do well? Now, I will say this, you know what I'm, I will say this. He does, like, his willingness to make adjustments, it is kind of obvious, you know. And he does seem to get along with the players. He does seem to be a player's coach, you know, so there is that going for him. But other than that, I don't really see what's uniquely good about him, you know, but he's not even my biggest concern. Like, I don't really care about Nick Sirianni like that. I hate Jonathan Gannon. Like, I hate him so much, man.
Why do you
like,
hate
that,
him?
That Raiders game. The
okay.
Raiders game. That's like that reason right there. I just like if you're not willing to be aggressive, like you getting eaten up anyway. You know what I'm saying? Just blitz. Like if they out there making like going 9 for 10 passing the ball. You know, to heck with it, blitz. Like, you know, like, we're not, like, this is not working, so why not just, you know, do something different? So whereas, you know, Nick Sirianni likes to, he can make adjustments, Jonathan Gannon is just stubborn. And, and that right there, I hope that's not our Achilles heels, especially being that the defense really made huge progress this offseason. You know, I want to see something. Like, you don't even have to be more aggressive, honestly. I just want to see you make stops. You know,
mm-hmm.
Like I hate that 8-9 play drive. Like that's boring to, and not just boring to watch. It's like, dang, man, like do something, get the ball out the QB hand, like do something, you know? So,
well, listen, now he has extra pieces. So a lot of eyes exactly. will be on him because of the fact that the cornerback situation looks to be solidified if you believe Bradberry is the guy opposite Slay. Now with having Hassan Reddick as a person you look at, even though he may not be a hand in the dirt coming off the edge, as a defensive end, specifically a defensive end, he's a pass rusher. He might give
right.
you double-digit sacks. So and the linebacker position seems to be improved as well. If he doesn't have a top 10 defense with this group and force turnovers where we see some playmakers making plays, then, yes, a lot of things will start to come down on Jonathan Gannon if those things don't happen.
All right. Before I go, let me ask you one question. How do you see the safety situation?
I don't know, because I saw that Kayvon Wallace was opposite Anthony Harris today, but I also saw where Marcus Epps, he did have an interception in the drills to 707, I think it was, today. So I don't know. Originally, I thought it was going to still be Epps battling with Tart, with Harris as the other safety. What about you?
Man, it's hard to say, because we don't really have any playmaking safeties. And last season, our linebacker was suspect in coverage. So I do want Rodney back there. At least he's a veteran. He can see things before they happen. He lost a step, but
unfortunately, they let him go to Indianapolis.
Oh, they let him go.
Rodney McLeod.
Dang, I didn't even know that.
Yes. That's why I'm saying it's Marcus Epps and potentially Harris or Kayvon Wallace or Jaquistegui Tart. Eric, thanks for the call. E, appreciate it, man. I have no idea. That's going to be a camp battle, I think. Maybe that's something we'll get into later on in the week with Thursday or Friday, where we talk about camp battles and we can talk to Tim McManus about it a little bit more. I mean, that's going to be a camp battle. I have no idea of where they're going to go with the safety position. Because, look, Anthony Harris is brought in to be a starter, we think. What if he's not any longer? What if a year later he's not that type of player? He didn't jump off the screen at his last season for us, any of us to be clamoring to have him back as a safety. But what if he just doesn't have it anymore after one year and he's done? And it is Kayvon Wallace or it is Marcus Epps with Jaquistegui Tart. I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, the one thing that he brought up that I think is fair to an extent, but you have to look back at what happened last year. He was talking about sitting back in coverage and playing that shell and the inverted two and a lot of zone and not blitzing many guys, only bringing four, maybe five at a time. All of that was done twofold. One, because it's how Gannon's scheme is set, and two, because of the fact that they didn't have the back seven to make plays, right? So, their linebacking core was suspect. Their secondary was... It had Slay and guys, right? And Maddox is really good in the slot, but how many times is he playing percentage-wise compared to a Slay in the other outside corner? Now you have an opportunity to... you have a bolstered defense, right? We hope that the pass rush is better, not just with the interior guys, but with guys like Reddick and Brandon Graham coming off the injury. That's something that we're still considering, but we hope that it's better. The linebacking core is definitely better. The secondary, at least at the cornerback position, I believe that Bradberry is an upgrade over Steven Nelson. I would feel more comfortable this season with them bringing some extra heat, with them bringing some extra pressure, because they have the ability to make the plays in the back seven. The second thing that he was talking about with combining with that was, you have to take a look at the quarterbacks in which they were doing that too. Now, if you want to talk about the Garrett Gilberts and the Daniel Joneses and the Cooper Rush or whomever else they played, Jared Goff, totally fine. But when you're in the playoffs, the one thing that we all have come to realize is you can't blitz Tom Brady. Cannot. Tom Brady eats blitzes alive,
for
right?
Sure. Yep.
But you also can't blitz none because he's going to have all day to make the play. You've got to find that common middle ground. And I think that's what that happy medium where they're going to sit this year is going to be. The defense is going to be the benefactor of having better talent, and so is Jonathan Gannon.
James on Twitter, Tyler says, I'm sold on the coach and the Eagles will be fine. So very simple, sold on Nick Sirianni, thinks they're going to be just fine, and no worries as far as the head coach goes. 610-632-0975. Mike in Springfield is with us next. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys, I wanted to talk about the Phillies and Kyle Schwarber. I know... I keep hearing people say he doesn't hit for enough average, he doesn't hit doubles, he doesn't have speed. I'm okay. If you have a leadoff hitter that can hit 50 home runs and drive in 90, if he hits 190, I'm okay with it.
And right now he's at 202 after going 0-for-2 so far this afternoon.
Yeah, but even if he hits 190 for the year, if he's hitting with that kind of power, I want him as my leadoff hitter. I always thought it would have been exciting to have a guy like a Joey Gallo or Dave Kingman hit leadoff, right? I mean, who says your leadoff hitter has to get on base and steal bases? Where's Where's that written that you have to have a scrappy leadoff?
So for you, just keep on hitting. Bottom line, just keep on hitting and drive. It would be nice if he was able to have some extra base hits where the, as far as the home runs, have somebody on base. And I understand that would have to be the bottom of the lineup if he's up at the top. But for you, Mike, it's okay. You don't need to see him in any other spot. You're good with where he is.
Well, I just think about it. When's the last time you saw a team have a leadoff hitter hit 50 home runs while hitting 190, even 180?
Yeah, I can't.
I mean,
yeah.
I've never seen it before. I think right. It's exciting. I think it's different, right? I mean, let me ask you this. Who made the rule that said a leadoff hitter has to get on base, right? I mean, what if the leadoff hitter is the best power hitter in the entire National League?
Yeah, but typically with that leadoff hitter, you would, if you feel like that's the type of pop that he has, that he would be more well served to be in that 3-4-5 hole where the RBIs will build up because you have runners in scoring position where he can take advantage of that. So while, yes, it is great to have that leadoff hitter, and let's say that he starts off the game quite a bit with the leadoff home run, that's just that one run. But if he's in that middle of the lineup, you have 2-3 possibly there as well, just to answer your question as the counter.
Well, to me, your leadoff hitter gets the most at-bats, right?
Yes, and that's what we always talk about here, yep.
He's going to get more. You're going to get Schwarber more at-bats, so he's more likely to hit 50 or 55 home runs as a leadoff hitter, I think, than he would if he's batting 3 or 4.
Sure,
right?
But I'm just asking, does it matter to you how many RBI he drives in?
I think he's going to drive in over 100 this year, but that's the thing. What if he only hits 180? Is that really a big deal? Is that a big deal to have a leadoff hitter with the worst batting average in the National League?
Again, it may not be a big deal because of how it happened and how you just laid it out, Mike, with all the home runs and over 100 RBI. So it's not going to be a big deal. And thanks for the call, Mike. Really appreciate it. And I know, Tyler, this is getting right into your wheelhouse of leadoff and, the amount of at-bats. Because we've talked about Kyle Schwarber at the top of the lineup, 0-for-2 today. As so far with the Phillies up 5-2 against the Braves in the bottom of the sixth. But he has driven in an RBI, batting 202. But this is something that you and I have talked about at night, where does it bother you if he does hit below 200 or around 200 but gives you 50 home runs as the example, as Mike gave us?
No, I mean, not really. So here's...
Especially if they're winning games and getting into the postseason.
Here's the spot where it's a really difficult balance, because I do believe that there's a lot of stats that have become antiquated throughout baseball. I think batting average is one that still needs to be considered. With that being said, as a leadoff hitter, I'm looking for somebody who can set the tone and set the table. I don't care if that comes via a high on-base percentage or a high home run total, because I care about setting the tone. If he gets on base, let's say he gets a leadoff single, right? You know I don't care about stolen bases. You know I care about maximizing results. Maximization of results for him would be somebody behind him to drive him in. What's the difference if somebody else drives him in or he drives himself in? Now, obviously, if Reese Hoskins hits a 2-run home run, it's a little bit different. Or if Harper comes back and you've got he and Hoskins on 3-run home run. Of course, those are weighted a little bit differently. But the fact is, if we're talking about driving one run in, I would rather do it with one swing of the bat than have to worry about somebody behind Kyle Schwarber driving him in. So for me, the two pieces that would work for me as a leadoff hitter, A, somebody who gets on base a ton, right? I don't care about speed. I don't care about stolen bases. I care about getting on base for the rest of the lineup to drive you in or drive yourself in. And that's what Kyle Schwarber does. The 190, it is low. I'd prefer for him, if we're going to talk about him hitting 40 home runs out of the leadoff spot, to be at like a 220 even. 190 seems super low. The one thing I don't agree with Mike on with that call is having a guy like Joey Gallo. Joey Gallo can't hit. Joey Gallo stinks. He strikes out way too frequently. And I know that, Schwarber's batting average is not much higher than Gallo's. He's in like the 160s. But Joey Gallo can't hit. He's got like 11 home runs this year. And I know in the past he's hit like 40.
Yeah, but I think he was talking about that Joey Gallo.
Right.
Yes.
But in this regard, would it be the worst thing to have? Is it the worst thing to have Kyle Schwarber lead off? No, not really. If he's going to set the table one way or the other, he might as well do it with one swing of the bat.
All right, you got it. 610-632-0975. Alec Bohm still hot. RBI double, scoring Nick Castellanos. The Phillies are now up 6-2 in the bottom of the sixth as he is on second with one out and Didi Gregorius at the plate at this time. Let's go back to the phones. Brett on the cell, 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Brett?
Hey, what's happening? First, let me start off and say that I'm very happy that you're getting this opportunity to be front stage in this little interim period. I hope it's a foreshadow for things to come for you.
Thank you.
When another opportunity presents itself. And then I'm going to just go real quick. I'm going to go what I thought of Nick in the beginning and what I think of Nick now.
Okay.
Corny is never going to play in this city. This is not a corny town. And depending on where you live, you can call it whatever you want, corny, hokey dokey, all shucks. Like, that's never going to play in this town. In that initial press conference, I walked away with my first impression. Overwhelmed, corny, is not going to work out. But we can supersede that. What can supersede that is authenticity. If that's who you are authentically, right, there's an intuitiveness about the players that can receive that authenticity and it can be accepted. If that's who you are authentically, then let's go. So I went
and that's who he seems to be consistently, right?
And I went from not thinking that he was capable to do the job and being overwhelmed to thinking that he's a young, up-and-coming coach that has high-end potential to be a higher-end coach. And then the other thing is the downfall of man, and we talk about life, sports, whatever it is, the downfall of man is always the ego. Right? How many times in sports, in this town and every other town in USA, do they refuse us until the ship has burned down to the ground? And I think the fact that he showed the willingness to adjust suggests that he's not fully consumed by his ego, which will allow him to make the best of all the tools that he has around him as far as coaches and the talent within the players. So I'm high.
And that,
adjustment
that you're talking about, Brett, is the play calling situation where he gave it up to Steichen, and then he told us later on that it was Steichen and not him. So he therefore put the credit and gave him the credit for everything that took place with their success in the second half.
Means something, bro. Means something.
Yep, it does. It does. And listen, man, that was a great layout, Brett. Thanks, man. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the kind words, too, man. Really appreciate that as well. But see, look how he laid it out. Again, Brett said it. I wasn't in there. I wasn't in on him in the first part. But he has been, if that's him, authentically, if that who he is, he continues to be that. And then in the end, to put the ego aside and let Shane Steichen do his job, and also to simply go out there and continue to be himself, and that locker room embraces him. That's what matters for a lot of people. And at the very end, wins and losses. Wasn't great last season, but it wasn't supposed to be. And they won 9 games. And we didn't expect that, and they got to the postseason. Got rocked, but they got that experience of getting rocked while they got there. Maybe that changes next time around.
Listen, I think that Brett's right to an extent. I don't think people take to
the corniness.
In this city take to the corniness and things like that. But I was talking to you about this before the show started, and I'm genuinely curious. These guys didn't do it, so we don't have any basis. But what if that was Andy's motive? What if that was Buddy Ryan's motive? People worship at the feet of Buddy Ryan, a guy who listen, had regular season success. That's all he had was regular season success.
A lot of it.
What if, yeah, but it doesn't translate to anything. Oh, it's greatest, one of the greatest Eagles teams of all time. Okay, cool. That's great. But it doesn't mean anything at the end of the day, right? So I genuinely wonder what would happen if one of those two guys were to have that kind of, mentality. Would things be different about the silliness? But I will say this. I went on the airwaves after we found out about the flowers thing, right? The watering the flowers and growing the flowers. And listen, I sat here and crushed the guy and said that now a game against the Detroit Lions in Detroit needs to be a must. It becomes a must-win game. Because if you say stuff like this and you lose, not only have you lost your locker room probably, you've definitely lost your city. So,
and what they do, put up a 40 spot?
But if it works, right, if whatever your messaging is gets through to your players – at the end of the day, I don't care what you you know, if you're corny or not. I don't care if you're any given Sunday cool or not. I don't care if you're somewhere in between. If it gets to your players, it gets to your players, and that's really all that matters.
Yeah, seems like it does. 610-632-0975. Patton in Northeast, hang on if you could. We'll get to you first when we get back to start off the next segment. We have Greg and Joe and others to talk about Nick Sirianni. What are you looking for from him? Brett just laid out a great explanation of where he was in the beginning to where he is now, all in, because the guy's being authentically himself. And if that's what it takes, and he continues to do that, and it vibes with the locker room, then so be it. How about you? 610-632-0975. And the Phillies just keep on hitting, up 7-2 now in the top of the seventh. We'll continue to talk about that on the radio side, 97.5, The Fanatic.
97.5, The Fanatic.
0975, keeping the Phillies conversation going as well with the Birds as they are currently playing the Atlanta Braves. We'll talk to Tim McManus at 4 o'clock. Jason Stark at 4:30, having both of those teams covered. And I can't believe this is still a conversation, but it's something involving basketball that we will bring up a little bit later as well. Just I'll just say it in passing a little bit later, just because it's like, is this seriously still a talking point where I think we've established this already? It's far, you know, established. It's ridiculous. But anyway, 610-632-0975. Let's go back to the phones. As promised, Pat in the Northeast with us, talking a little bit about Nick Sirianni and where Pat is on the Eagles head coach. What's up, Pat?
Hey, Devon, Tyler, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Nice. Hey, yeah, I'm getting a little tired of hearing Nick's Aesop fables. You know what I mean? Talk about practice. We as, like, Eagle fans, we're smart enough to know. You know what I mean? We don't need to know about mountains or hills. Right?
No, I got you. I got you.
And it's like, I want to hear about the players. Like, what players came in, who looks good, you know, who looks in better shape than they did last year. You know, I'm sure they didn't really have, like, a full-blown practice yesterday. Right?
It was actually today.
Right, okay.
Today. It was a 58-minute practice.
Okay, yeah. All right, well, let's hear about that. You know what I mean?
Well, he did. He answered quite a bit about that. But, you know, he likes to throw in those analogies, Pat, where, again, this is him being him. This is who he is. He's saying it. But he is talking about the football aspect of it.
Well, now I know, like, why Rory Hobbs walked out in the natural. Remember when they brought the one guy in?
Yes, so you said now you know. Why? Why?
Well, I can't believe that the veterans are sitting there listening to this in the locker room.
Yeah, but how can you not believe it when they seem to accept him for what he is and when he says this stuff?
Well, I don't know how to answer that. You know what I mean?
In the end, that's what matters, is for him to reach them. And if he throws these things in there that seem very weird to us and might even seem weird to them, Pat, but they respond. They go out there and they perform.
Well, yeah, well, that's all we want.
Right. Yeah, so what if he says mountains and water bottles and basketball courts and skateboards? As long as they are 12 and 5 at the end and hopefully a Super Bowl champion, does it matter?
This is the first, right? So I can't wait to hear what else he has to say.
Well, no, I mean, he's talked about the flowers in the past and watching the flowers grow and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can't believe Tyler hasn't played Ain't No Mountain High Enough yet from the Supremes. I'll talk to you, Devon.
You got it, Pat. You want to incorporate the song with the mountains in it. Well, you got Usher, Moving Mountains. You can go there with Usher, Moving Mountains. The Supremes, as you talked. I mean, listen. You can get into all of that kind of stuff, but, you know, Pat, we don't mind at this point. We kind of shake our heads and say, all right, you know, it's Nick Sirianni being Nick Sirianni, talking about mountains and stuff. That's what he's doing. But, all right, they respond to it. There you go. Pat, you ask, Tyler delivers. All right? Say it's not high enough. At all. And what happens? The Eagles go out there and they listen to what Nick Sirianni, he probably played that, thinking that that was going to reach. Probably played it, thinking that was going to reach his players. 610-632-0975. 0975. Greg in Bethlehem next on 97.5 The Fanatic. How you doing, Greg?
Hey, guys. It's good to be talking birds again.
How about that? Yeah, man. You know, this is the start, and it will not stop going forward through let me see, what, February? And then free agency and then the draft. So you know we're going to have it for the next 10 months.
Yeah, I've generally been pretty happy with Sirianni's play calls, although I do think there's times when the running game is strong and is working, and for some reason he doesn't realize he could run the ball three times or even four to make the 10 yards. You know, he seems like he occasionally feels like he has to throw a pass in, obviously there's times when you might take advantage of other teams creeping up to the line of scrimmage to play the run. But if the run game is working, you know, you don't abandon it.
Yeah, you keep going. And look, he's not the only one, though, Greg. We know that. That's how the NFL is, because it is so pass heavy. He's not the only one that does that.
No, you're right. And maybe he's just following suit. But, you know, I think we had a strong running game, and I think there were times where we could have taken more advantage of it.
Well, listen, in the second half of the season, there wasn't a lot to complain about as far as that, because they were run heavy in that second half, and that's how they got to where they were.
Yeah, I mean, think of how much better they would have been if we didn't have Jalen Reagor out there dropping the ball. What's his status this year, do you know?
He's lower down in the depth chart, of course, with Smith and Brown at the top, and then you have Zach Pascal who came in, and Quez Watkins, it seems right now, they're ahead of him on the depth chart. But I wouldn't be surprised if he did play well, they wouldn't give him an opportunity. Saw him make a catch already via the video that has been out there, that he did make a catch today in practice. So he's down on the depth chart. Could he improve his status? I'm sure he could, but he has a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, guys like that that have some speed, although I'm not sure how fast he really is, you know, tend to gravitate to the special teams. But problem is, you can't count on him to catch a punt, or he doesn't know when to take a knee on a kickoff. He just doesn't look comfortable.
He does not. He does not. Maybe a change of scenery for him is what, Greg, thanks for the call, that he's ultimately going to get, because he just hasn't done it here for the Philadelphia Eagles. Don't know. I don't know. But right now, he's one that's way down on the list for me as guys that I'm paying attention to, because I just don't think he's that good.
Well, yeah,
he might be better. He might be better. But guess what? He hasn't shown us that so far. So as of right now, my thought of him, he's not that good. So he's way down on the list for me.
Totally fair. You're not going to get any argument from me. I got nothing positive to say.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, from a football standpoint, I got no reason to trust the guy.
Nope, none whatsoever. But I do trust that Derek and Joe, who are waiting, and others will be there when we get back. 610-632-0975 will get you up. Talking about Nick Sirianni and your thoughts. We'll get to the Phillies a little bit as well. And we have to bring over something that we wanted to talk about with you yesterday. About a word that is often used in professional sports, and specifically over the past couple of seasons with the Philadelphia 76ers. It also bleeds into the other teams as well. We'll bring that up a little bit later, and we'll also talk to Tim McManus and Jason Stark in the 4 o'clock hour as well. 610-632-0975 is the afternoon show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
0975, the afternoon show here. On the radio side, we'll get to television once the Phillies and the Braves go final and they have the postgame show. We'll join in progress, of course, the show on the television side, 610-632-0975. The 3 o'clock hour is brought to you by Corporally's Bakery and Deli, world-famous tomato pie and hoagie party trees, every bit as good. I'll save it for later. I'll get there because it's kind of the fact that we're still talking about this just drives me nuts when it comes to this thing that still bothers me. Did you see yesterday when we were talking about, I was telling you the players were arriving to the training complex, NovaCare complex,
yeah.
And I said there was a big bus. And then Matt Menard told us that it was Gardner Minshew. Did you see the bus? It's like the old school bus where, not the long yellow bus, but it's the bus that has that like the lip over the cabin where you sit and drive. It's that type of bus.
Why?
A white one.
Why?
Because he's Gardner Minshew.
Because he's weird. Like, this is intentional at this point. Like, he's trying to be weird at this point. Like, it's not a, listen, again, I always tell you this. If you're not hurting anybody, you're not, you know, causing any
do
trouble.
Do your thing.
Do your thing. But, like, he's just a different dude. Totally different dude.
Does it make it better that in the bus, his musical taste, he has posters inside the van, bus, whatever it is? Tom Petty.
No.
ZZ Top.
I mean, listen.
Gonna run him off. You okay. Say yes, no, and then you go ahead and explain.
So, all right. So,
Tom Petty,
I understand the legacy of Tom Petty. I am not a Tom Petty fan.
ZZ Top.
I guess.
He's a mustache guy. They have the long beards.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't know. Rush.
Again, Rush is one of the greatest bands of all time. I've actually done Rush as a side topic. I hate Rush. But I understand that Rush is incredibly, incredibly talented.
Black Sabbath.
Yes.
UFO.
I don't know enough of their music to say yes or no.
Eric Clapton.
Yes.
The Stones.
No. Well, again, not a Stones guy. But yes, I get the merit to the Stones, but I'm not a Stones fan.
Etc. I also see a Pink Floyd on here.
Yes.
I see Queen
yes.
on here. I'm kind of squinting to try to, you know, Elvis Presley poster, AC/DC, Jimi Hendrix in there.
Two yeses and a no there.
Sick Clapton already, Tom
AC/DC
Petty.
AC/DC and Hendrix, yes.
I can't see
Elvis,
that.
No.
I can't see the full name there. I think I know what it is, but I can't say it. The Beatles.
Yes.
He has on here. And I think that's it.
Okay.
I think that's it. Yeah.
So he's clearly like, you know, he's a classic rock guy. He likes classic rock. He likes a little bit of...
And he likes the classic transportation.
Different guy.
That he is. 610-632-0975. I just sent it to you. It's from our buddy Kevin Kincaid. He added the posters and all on his Twitter account. Let's get back to the phones talking Nick Sirianni and where you are with him going into his second season as the guy in charge of the Philadelphia Eagles, trying to get them again back to the playoffs, but most importantly, get them to the Super Bowl. Seems he's doing it a little bit differently as a guy reaching his players. Let's go to Derek in West Philly next to find out what he needs to do in order for you to accept him as your head coach. Derek, what's going on?
Okay, I'm doing fine. It's Eric.
Eric, how you doing? Sorry about that. That's my mistake.
Oh, no problem. Now, I heard a couple of callers back, and he was talking about the coaching, and it seemed to me that he like spread out the instructions between the I guess the offensive and the defensive coach.
Yes.
Well, I remember Dick Vermeil. They did an interview with him, and he said when he was with the Eagles, he took over all the responsibilities and this, that, and that, and did everything. He had a hand in everything. Now, when he went to L.A., he just sat back and let everybody. Matter of fact, when he went to L.A., it was like a whole bunch of former head coaches. And he just sat back and let the coaches do their jobs. And they went to playoffs and a couple of Super Bowls.
Oh, this is the St. Louis Rams. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I was thinking about that. How do you need a lot of these coaches, they take on too much responsibility.
Yes. And see, that was something that we talked about a lot last year, Derek, when he was doing it. We were like, all right, they're getting off to this slow start. Does he need to stop having these, you know, the play calls and just let everybody else do their part and you head coach? Now,
you
may have to sprinkle some things in here from time to time on the offensive side since that's your thing. But for the most part, let your assistants, let your coordinators coordinate their side of the football. And that includes, of course, with him, the offensive side with Shane Steichen.
Right. And then you get a more different opinion on whatever's going on. Your opinion might not be the right opinion at that particular part of the game.
Now,
I got a question, one question.
Sure, yeah.
Years ago, they had a, what is that, the special teams coach. That coach that was from Portland, I think. But the special teams coach, their special teams was clicking that year. I mean, they won a couple of games. I can't remember his name.
Well, the most famous one here has been Harbaugh, because Jim Harbaugh, he's now the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens. I'm trying to think. You said Portland, coming from Portland?
That the head coach was the one that was coaching at the time. And the special teams coach, whenever the special teams, they was winning the games. And I was wondering when, I don't know his name, or just wondering, this was years ago. And I remember when that coach was getting ready to go, people were saying, what about that special teams coach? And they said, no, he's too young. You know, we can't use him like that.
Maybe it was Harbaugh.
Maybe
he's had a lot of success with the Baltimore Ravens, won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. And what they did too, Derek, was at some point Andy Reid had elevated him from just simply being the special teams coach to the defensive backs coach. And then eventually he went on to be a head coach with the Baltimore Ravens. So maybe it was him.
Well, good for him. That's because I remember that year that special teams was really doing its job.
Well, listen, he did it. Thanks again, man. Appreciate it. He did a lot as a special teams coach here for the Philadelphia
Eagles. All right,
Eagles.
So real quick, here are the special teams coordinators dating back to 1991.
91.
Dave Adkins in 91.
Okay.
It looks like nobody was listed from 91 to 98. Harbaugh was it from 98 to 06. Rory Segrist was 07 to 08. Ted Dasher was 2009. Bobby April was 10 to 12. Dave Phipp was 13 to 20. And Michael Clay is the current special teams coordinator.
My opinion had to be Harbaugh.
What is he talking about with Portland, though?
That Portland part I don't get, unless he's talking about Portland, Maine. I don't know. Where are they from? Where the Harbaugh's from?
No idea.
They're not from Portland, Maine. But anyway, if I had to guess, it's Harbaugh. My guess.
I guess.
It would have to be Harbaugh. Yep. You see an update? I was just talking to our great friend, of course, here, Paul Blake, and we were talking in the hall before we got in here. I came back in here. I had stepped out for a second. And you see the update, Brittany Griner?
No.
Yeah. Apparently, United States has sent a, quote, substantial trade to Russia for the release of Brittany Griner. Don't know what it is, but there's a substantial trade out there for her release. So we'll see. Las Vegas Aces win the, what is that, the Commissioner's Cup? I think.
Yes, the
Commissioner's Cup. In the WNBA. They're good.
Yeah.
They're very good. I keep telling people, hey, go watch the WNBA. They're very good. Very good. Back to the phones we go. 610-632-0975, Joe in West Philly. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, what's up, DeBon? What's going on?
What's happening?
Yo, first I got to check my man Tyler. He kept coming after my man Buddy Ryan.
Buddy Ryan. I'll let him stand up for himself on this one.
He was the head coach of the 1985 Bears, the Super Bowl. We know Mike Dickey didn't do nothing that year. Buddy Ryan came here. He set the tone for defense. What we think of defense to today. I mean, from Jerome Brown, Reggie White, them days. I mean, he set the tone. He put the Eagles on the map. I mean, I know they went to the Super Bowl in 80, but nobody, I mean, the Philadelphia Stars was bigger than the Eagles. And Buddy Ryan, man, I think he
already, already know Tyler's answer, but they didn't win.
I mean, he didn't win.
And he didn't care. He didn't care about the offense.
I mean, he came to a losing organization. I mean, he was ahead of his time. He put Randall in the game. I mean, maybe he didn't have, you know, he wasn't much of an offensive guy to know what to do with Randall, but he knew to put Randall in the game. And, I mean, you know what was his thing? Let Randall make three big plays, and we might get a win and get out of here.
Right.
I mean, I think, you know, I love Buddy, man. I mean, he really made me key on to the Eagles because I watched that 85 Bears season. I've never seen a defense like that. You know what I mean? But
Tyler's sitting back there shaking his head, man.
I love Buddy. Buddy set the tone with what our defense is today, man. He really did. Like I was telling the producer, Haley, I was telling her about Sirianni. Like, As far as him, he's a young guy. He's not a grizzly veteran. The game hasn't chewed him up and spit him out. You know what I mean? And I think we're afraid of young talent sometimes in Philadelphia. I mean, we used to the hardcore coach speak and all that kind of stuff. They hired a young guy, you know what I mean, from the bottom of the totem pole. You know what I mean? So he hasn't been through the grits and grind of the NFL. I mean, he's probably just happy in the world just being an assistant coach. He never thought he would be a head coach probably until 10 years from now. So that's why right. I think you don't get all the coach speak and the grizzled veterans talk from him. I mean, he's a young guy. He's more in tune. I bet Bill Belichick wouldn't know how to pick up a Madden joystick or a PlayStation joystick. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? This guy, they're younger. They're more, you know, in tune to these younger players that they're coaching. You know what I mean? Like, who didn't play Nerf basketball. Like we were playing in the NBA. Everybody. Yep. I mean, younger, we played Nerf basketball. It seems like the guy's more in tune to his players, and he's not scared to follow that. He's not scared to wear Jalen Hurts t-shirts. He's not scared to put himself out there.
Do you have a problem with how he does it?
No, I don't have a problem with how he does it. I mean, not really. I mean, I thought he made, you know, more veteran players, he would do it. But no, I mean, but he's showing his players that he's putting his name on the line for them. You mean, you put the name on the line for him. I mean, for Jalen Hurts not to be, you know, a certified player yet in the NFL, you know what I mean? I mean, that shows a great type of, you know, respect that your coach is showing to you. I mean, I think he's putting the pressure on you, too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's putting a lot of pressure on you. I mean, the pressure more on you than him, I think, at the end of the day. But I just think the respect that you can't be so scared of these young talent, these young coaches. I mean, we're so used to the, you know, grizzly coaches, hard veterans doing things their way. You know, old school shoe glass, run through walls and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And some of these younger guys are different. They're different cats. And some of these younger players don't go for all that anymore. You know what I mean?
Right, that's what I was saying. Maybe he's reading it differently because he sees the complexion of his locker room, and that's not necessarily where he sees fit for this group.
No.
And it might be him in general, and he's just running with being himself.
Yeah, it got him to the playoffs last year.
Sure did.
Broke, then don't try to fix it.
And I didn't see them going to the playoffs last year, so great job by him.
Right. I mean, it was an awesome job he did last year. Nobody expected he was going to playoff. And you know what I mean? I like him turning the pressure up on Hurts, wearing his t-shirt in front of camera, in front of everybody. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Either you know what I mean? Gonna make him or break him. You know what I mean? You know, Sirianni gonna be there next year, but are you there?
Bill Hurts, right? Right. Absolutely. No doubt about it. Well, listen, man, always great to catch up, Joe.
Always
thanks.
Great, man. Anytime. Awesome.
You got it, man. Appreciate it. So, before we get to his points that Joe gave us, Brad on Twitter as Birdie Fishscale, Sean, which is at dude with 3 U's, _ sweet, and A, _ Blount, 45, all jumped in and said it was Dave Phipp. Special teams coach talked about from the connection with Portland.
Is that where Portland comes in?
Portland, Maine, where Chip Kelly.
Oh, okay.
Right, yeah. So
I got it now.
Originally, I'm thinking Portland, West Coast, that's why I said Portland, Maine, but I couldn't think of the connection, but it was Dave Phipp and Chip Kelly. So all three, Brad, Sean, and A, thank you guys for all checking in and reminding us of that with the connection to Chip Kelly, because I totally forgot about Dave Phipp with Chip Kelly and the main thing.
Yeah, that makes way more sense. By the way.
Yes.
With his...
with Joe?
Yeah. With Buddy? Listen, I wasn't alive for it. Right? So I get it. I wasn't there. I can only look back in retrospect. And when you look back in retrospect, you do not have emotional ties to teams, right?
And you see how revered that defense, that
correct,
team in general was.
Right. Like I can promise you that there is somebody right now, let's say somebody that was born in the year 2012, right? 20 years from now, when they're approximately my age, right? Like I am right now. They're going to look at the 2011 team and go, yeah, they were good, but why did y'all love them so much? Talking about the Phillies, right? They didn't win anything. They lost in the first round of the playoffs. Why did y'all love them so much?
100
right?
plus wins.
And so I totally get that there's a disconnect for me compared to those who watch the buddy teams and those who, you know, when I always talk about the buddy team, you know what team comes next? The 93 Phillies. I don't get it. I truly do not get it. I just don't understand it. But the point is, the buddy teams, like, yeah, they were ferocious defensively. Yes, they had Randall, but they never put it together to get to the point where they're not even talking about getting to a Super Bowl or getting to an NFC title game. They didn't win a playoff game. They didn't win a single playoff game How am I supposed to sit here and go, oh yeah, man, that guy was the truth. That guy, that team was it, man. Like, I can't. And I get, again, there's that disconnect. I wasn't born, or I was super, super young at the very end of the Buddy Ryan tenure, but I just don't, I don't fathom it. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Again, you're not alone. Your age and even others, not alone. Not alone at all. 610-632-0975. Devon Givens, the afternoon show on 97.5 The Fanatic. Until 6 o'clock, we'll be joining the TV side after the post-game show on NBC Sports Philadelphia.
Yeah, I'd bet probably 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock
based
hour.
Based on how this is, the game is trending, I'd bet probably 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock hour. Okay, cool. All right, let's go back to the phones. Aaron on the cell does want to talk about the Phillies next on 97.5. Aaron, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
So everybody's talking about Kyle Schwarber, and, like, you know, one thing that seems interesting that people didn't pay attention is if you look at his June stats, so everybody knew that June was his month, right?
Right.
Right. So in June, if you look at his stats, his April and May are his two worst months. His June, his July, historically, is his third worst month. He has a career average of .217. So if you look at his home runs and RBIs, In the month, so in May, in June, in his career, he has 47 homers and 104 RBIs. In July, he has 25 and 50. And then in August, he's back to 40 and 84, which doesn't, that includes the June he already had. So he's just a very cyclical player. He'll probably be coming back in August. And when you have him coming back in August the way he probably was playing in June, historically, as you will, and you get back, your first and third best hitters, and you get somebody from the trade deadline, I think the Phillies are going to be fine. It's interesting that people look at baseball like they look at football or even basketball. It's 162 games. I mean, Phillies lose two in a row. The city's like, oh, the Phillies are done. The Phillies are done. And it's just interesting to me to hear that.
Well, what do you think as far as they go? What do you think they need as far as the trade deadline, Aaron?
You need to get a starting pitcher because you have,
over anything else.
Where do they go to get a starting pitcher?
No, I'm saying over anything else, center fielder, all of that, you'll take a starting pitcher 100%, first.
You need a starting pitcher. They have a fragile starting lineup. I mean, it's fragile now. I mean, right now, who's our fifth starter?
You don't have one. You have a spot starter. Bailey Falter.
I mean, you can't keep shooting down the bullpen like 3-4 innings every day. So I think, they get a starting pitcher who could actually just, you can't have Falter who once it's a bullpen day when he starts or whoever. Maybe they get lucky. Maybe that kid, in Double A is ready to play in September, like in a Dickie Knowles role, but they can't risk that. They got to get a solid starting pitcher, get somebody from the A's or the Rangers and somebody they could rely on. Kind of like a Kyle Gibson, picked him up 2 years ago. You get a guy like that who could be a fifth starter who, he did a fine job today. But the Phillies if I would have told you they took two or three out of the Braves, would you be happy with that?
Yes, I would.
Yeah, so I mean, I just think they're going to be into it. You get Segura back and you get Harper back, and it's kind of like, it's the same thing like any other team when they have injuries and people settle into their proper slots. So you have people batting out of their positions, playing too many games that they should play. And I'll tell you one other thing. Bryson Stott, in my opinion, is in some way analogous, the Phillies. He's like the Phillies version of Tarvese Maxey. He's becoming a fan favorite. And that kid, as he's filling out, is becoming a better hitter. He may only be hitting 200, but if you just watch his at bats, he's going to be a good player. And I just see him getting better and better as months go by.
Today, he's 1-for-3, run scored and a walk for Bryson Stott. You see him as long-term, what position?
100%. I see him as a long-term shortstop. When Segura comes back, I'd put him at short. And then I'd have Didi coming off the bench. I think Didi's shot for the most part, but he may be better as a reserve with his health and his knees and whatnot.
At this stage of his career, right?
Yeah. I appreciate you, man. It's enjoyable to listen to you in the afternoon.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Aaron. Really appreciate that. And what do you think about? We can get to Bryson Stott. We'll talk about him when we get back. 610-632-0975. It's the afternoon show. Right here, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
329, 97.5 The Fanatic. Devon Givens with you on the afternoon show. 610-632-0975. Tyler Zuli is here as well. You'll have the leftovers in the 5 o'clock hour. Tim McManus joins us at 4 p.m. for his training camp report. And at 4:30, we'll have Jason Stark. hopefully talking about a Phillies victory, as they are a one out away from getting this victory and taking the series against the Atlanta Braves. But before we do so and get to it all, the 3 o'clock poll update is brought to you by Paul B. Moyer & Sons in Doylestown, PA. Tyler Zuli has the poll update.
We do. Yeah, the question today is, do you 100% feel comfortable with Nick Sirianni as the Eagles head coach heading into 2022? 62% of the 367 votes say yes. 34% say not yet. They need to see more. Just 4% say outright no.
Outright no. No. How much? How many?
4%.
4%.
Yep.
Okay.
So we're talking about 4% of 370. We're talking about, I don't know, 15 people, 18 people, 20 people. That's not bad.
That's not bad at all. Especially, again, with the quirks and all that comes with Nick Sirianni. Only for that, that's not bad at all. Not bad at all.
I don't care. You know, the thing is, like I said, I don't care about the quirks. I don't care about how he gets through to his players. Guys do things in a different way. And I know I used this analogy already, but it feels repeatable. I don't need, you know, any given Sunday cool guy. You know, I don't need miracle, you know, just awe-inspiring, go out there and take it type speech, right? I don't need the movie speech. I need whatever gets through to your players. And that, whatever gets through to your players, evolves over time, because people, you know, mindsets change over time. And I don't even mean like a generation to a generation. It could literally be week to week, right? What worked last week? Oh, flowers and mountains. You win. Okay, that works. You don't win. You got to find another angle. You know what I mean? So, like, you got to figure out what works. So, if the quirky stuff is in there and this team's winning football games, I don't really care. I don't really, at this point, right? I was terribly frustrated at the, we got to plant flowers and let them grow, because they weren't playing good football, right? They were a bad football team at that point. They had just coming off getting crushed by the Raiders. They looked lifeless against the Buccaneers.
Yes.
So, I totally get it.
Yes.
But now that I have a full season to look at, I don't care if he's talking about moving mountains or climbing mountains or ain't no mountain high enough. Whatever it is, it doesn't bother me.
Ain't no mountain high enough. 610-632-0975. We have a final. Tyler, the final. 7-2.
Ring the bell.
Ring the bell. The Phils with the W over the Atlanta Braves. They take the series as well, and they are now 51-47 after today's victory over the Atlanta Braves. So a good win, a good bounce back win, second half of the season. And next up, they will have the Pittsburgh Pirates for 4 in Pittsburgh. And that will be all in Pittsburgh, 2 in Atlanta before they return home August 4th against the Washington Nationals. And next up will be Zach Wheeler against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Bailey Falter, Ranger Suarez, Aaron Nola. That looks to be the 4 right now against the Pittsburgh Pirates. But good win this afternoon over the Atlanta Braves and taking the series. They get the W. They get the save. Andrew Bilotti, as you talked about, gets the save here for the Phillies. They scored 5 in the 5th to take a 5-0 lead at that point. And they added on 2 more in the 6th after the Braves put up 6. 2 on the board. So a good win for the Phils this afternoon. We will take your phone calls. If you're at home watching the game and you want to talk about it, 610-632-0975. Good one. Good one. Now let's get to, before we get to Alec Bohm, let's get to the Bryson Stott part that we were talking about and where he is. 195 after today's game, 1-for-3 this afternoon with a run scored and a walk. He also had a walk today, Bryson Stott. So I don't know if he's Tyrese Maxey. We don't know. We don't know. We saw Tyrese Maxey just jump on it right away in year number 2 and said, okay, this guy has star potential, and will he reach that? Bryson Stott looks like he could be a really good player. Tyler, do you agree that shortstop, once everything, Gene Segura comes back, I know how you feel about Didi Gregorius, which I'm asking based on the call that we just took.
Yeah.
Are you there, Bryson Stott? Just give him the position, shortstop, and let those two share that as Gene Segura comes back and takes over at second.
Not quite yet. Listen, I think that I agree with our last caller, and the approach has been much better. He doesn't look lost at the plate anymore. The first couple of months of the season, you would watch his at-bats, and it's kind of like what we were talking about with Nick Castellanos, you know, yesterday and throughout the last couple of weeks. Stott looked lost. There's no doubt about it. But he doesn't look lost anymore.
He's settled in.
He's settled in a little bit. The at-bats have been cleaner. The at-bats have been stronger. It seems like he knows what he's doing. Even if the tangible, like, statistical results aren't there just yet, you know, routinely, the at-bats look pure. And I'm not sure that he's ready for that everyday role just yet, because I think that you can get value in Didi up against the right-handed pitcher, like you saw last night with him going, you know, obviously the stats weren't there, but he gets the start because Strider's on the mound, and, you know, he's a solid power right-handed pitcher. So I'm not ready to just sit here and say, yeah, you know, give it to Stott, it's over for Didi, and you know, the $15 million comes off the books, and we're just letting this 60-game stretch run out at this point. But I am much more comfortable with Stott than I was 3 weeks ago, than I was 6 weeks ago, than I was at the beginning of the season.
Now, Alec Bohm, star of the game, if you will. And look, Derek Hall was 2-for-4. JT Realmuto was 2-for-4 with 2 RBIs as well. He's up to 257. But Alec Bohm, 293, 2 RBI, 2-for-4, 2 runs scored as well. Man, he has been playing some really good baseball as of late, where he's starting to feel, to your point, really comfortable with Alec Bohm right now. Even at third base, right? Even at third base, we're not saying he's Mike Schmidt, but even at third base, he's looking better out there, looking and feeling more comfortable with Alec Bohm out there with you as well.
Well, listen, defensively, he's never going to be Mike Schmidt. He's never going to be any close to being a gold glove, you know, defender at third. Like today, you saw the play earlier today where, you know, it was a hard hit ball. The gold glove type third baseman, the legitimate third, you know, hot corner type third baseman, make that play. They do snare it. But he put his body in the right position. He wasn't Olaying, right? He wasn't like a matador with the cape and the bull. Like he put his body in the right position, and it kind of snow coned off his glove. That is what I'm looking for him to make the routine play. I'm looking for him to make the plays that are put in front of him. I don't necessarily right now need him to be, you know, Mike Schmidt or Scott Rolen over there at third base. I need him to be a serviceable Alec Bohm every day at third base. And right now, I feel, again, much like I was talking about Stott, I feel more comfortable with his glove now than I did at the beginning of the season, than I did last year, than I did his rookie year. I feel more comfortable with him on the field in general, because yes, his at-bats have been good too.
Yes. Yes, by the way, I always stand up for Scott Rolen. Scott Rolen was my guy. Corey Sutton.
Yeah, you're one of about 7 people I know.
Exactly.
Because people do not like Scott Rolen in this city still.
And I still don't.
Which is crazy.
I still stand up for him.
Because he just wanted to go, he said, you know, win.
By the way, you guys still stink. You're not doing anything. I don't care how much money you throw at me. No, I'm not doing this.
Send me to St. Louis.
Send me somewhere else. Yes, stop. And where was he wrong? You know what I mean? He didn't leave you. He was talking about the organization. All right. Corey Simon, our buddy, NBC Sports Philadelphia, does a great job. Philly's pre- and post-game live analyst and senior digital producer there as well. Corey had Alec Bohm about an hour ago. Says next game will be his 250th game in the majors. He's a 283 career hitter so far, 303 with runners in scoring position. 250th game will be tomorrow. Not bad. It looks good for him. Arrow pointing up for him at this time. It looks like he could be a good player with this organization going forward.
Yeah, I think that he's going to go through stretches where we're going to be pulling our hair out, because he's not, I don't think he's ever going to be at like superstar level. I think that, but if he can reach the consistency that we've seen, I think that when we look at Alec Bohm, the issue with him is we tend to take the worst of the worst and throw it on him and go, this guy stinks. He's on a 5-game hitless streak. He's got 3 errors in 4 games. And he looks lost out there. But the reality is, in the whole, you know, scape of the season and his career, he's been a plus hitter. He's been a productive hitter. The only thing that's not manifested itself from when he was at Wichita State and why he was drafted with the 3rd overall pick was that plus power. He's not a big power guy right now. But listen, if I can get a guy who plays consistently average to plus average defensive third base, and a guy that's going to hit me 280, 290, and a guy that's going to drive in some runs, and a guy that's going to have a little bit of gap-to-gap power, the Major League Baseball draft is such a fluke at times, where you could draft a guy who goes on to be a superstar in the 35th round, and you can draft a guy with the first overall pick who took him 10-plus years and a second chance at baseball in Mark Appel to make his Major League debut. If you get a productive Major League player out of your first-round pick, if you get a productive Major League player out of any pick, you've done something right. And if I can get Alec Bohm to be an everyday productive Major League player, like it seems like he's trending towards, that's plenty for me.
Corey also says they are 29-29 against Atlanta in the last four seasons. The Phillies are. Braves are 76 games over 500.
Wait, hold up. They're what?
29-29.
That's baffling to me.
Braves are 76 games over 500 against everyone else over that span, and 109-64 versus the rest of the National League East. That, again, Corey Seidman of NBC Sports Philadelphia.
I feel like you're making that up. There's no way they're a 500 team against Atlanta. There's no way.
29 the last four seasons.
That's incredible, considering how I feel. It was just like I was saying with the Alec Bohm thing. Sometimes it feels like you take the worst. I feel like all I can think of is the Gabe Kapler blunder on opening weekend, and you know all these the losing the game. What was it, 10-9 last year, where they blow the 4-run lead in the ninth inning?
Yeah.
And yep. I just feel like I'm looking at the worst. 29-29 is actually way better than I thought that they were going to be.
Another weird one that he had yesterday with Aaron Nola on the mound and them losing the game. Phillies are 62-63 in games started by Nola and Zach Wheeler over the last three seasons when they are on the mound. So good stuff from Corey. Good win by the Phillies this afternoon. And if you are leaving Citizens Bank Park, we will absolutely take your phone calls. 610-632-0975 is the Phillies walk away with a 7-2 victory over the Atlanta Braves, take the series, and move on to play the Pittsburgh Pirates tomorrow for a four-game set beginning on Thursday in Pittsburgh. So 610-632-0975 and the box score overall. Gibson gets the win. He went six innings pitched, two earned runs, four strikeouts, two walks, 6-4 record now. Charlie Morton, he takes the loss, 5-5. Olsen did get a home run off of Kyle Gibson. We already know that Olsen is good. So there's that. But Castellanos, he went today 1-for-4 and with a run scored. Hall, Derek Hall, two hits on the afternoon. Same for JT Realmuto. Alec Bohm, as mentioned, two hits as well. They totaled 10 overall against the Braves, two errors by the Braves, five hits against the Phillies pitching with the two runs, and the Phillies did not commit an error this afternoon in the game. So 610-632-0975, check in with us. We're going until 6 o'clock. We're on the radio side. We'll join TV side in the 4 o'clock hour, and we will talk to Tim McManus for the training camp report at 4. Jason Stark about the Phillies taking 2 of 3 this afternoon. We'll speak with Jason at 4:30 for his weekly visit. We'll keep it going on the other side. Coming back on the afternoon show, I'm Devon Givens. Tyler Zuli is with us as well. 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Ah, lovely tweet I see from Sports Talk ATL that I get.com. Can't wait to sweep the Phillies. Well, that didn't happen. 610-632-0975. The afternoon show. Here on 97.5, The Fanatic. Jason Stark at 4:30. Tim McManus at 4 o'clock to get our first training camp report from our guy, T-Mac, ESPN.com, and 97.5, The Fanatic contributor, as always. And, they did not sweep the Phillies. The Phillies took 2 of 3. So there's that. And the Phillies now are tied with the St. Louis Cardinals in the standings, in the wild card standings, third place, as we are focused on that, as we all know. They're right now even record, 51-47, both at .520 percentage and 3.5 games back of the San Diego Padres. So as much as we talk about this and now 7 games back of the Braves, we don't ignore the fact that, hey, you might even catch up to whoever's number 2. And right now that's the San Diego Padres because you're only 3.5 games back. Phillies now winning this one. And the Cardinals have lost their last 2. The Giants have lost their last 6. So they're really falling backwards at 48 and 49, a two-game lead over the Marlins. And the Chicago Cubs, deep bottom down there, they've won six in a row. The Nationals, you know, taking care of the Dodgers. What's going on with that? But they won three in a row as the Nationals do that. So Phillies, they get it done today. Five-run inning to give them a 5-0 advantage at that point. Come back and match the two that the Braves put on the board, and they walk away with the 7-2 win. Right there with the Cardinals. They could... Padres, 3.5 games.
Well, I mean, technically, technically speaking, if the season ended right this second, they'd be a playoff team.
Yes, they have the tiebreaker.
Tiebreaker over them?
Yes, they do.
And the Brewers, by the way. So, because here's the thing, like we were talking about, it's very, very likely, wow, I probably should go back to like second grade with that voice crack. It's very, very likely that the whoever doesn't win the NL Central is probably going to be a wild card team. I mean, unless one of the two of them just like drastically fall off. Or let me rephrase that, is probably going to be a wild card competitor, not necessarily a wild card team. The fact that you have the tiebreaker over both of them, it holds a lot of merit for the Phillies because of the fact that no matter who wins the division, if you're battling with either of them for a wild card spot, at the end of the day, you've got the tiebreaker, which is huge.
Yeah, man. So look, they're giving us something. We're approaching August, and they're going to be in it. The fact of the matter is, now the question is, can they keep it up? Sean M. Keenan 1 on Twitter says, good series win. Need to start beating up on the lower teams like the Cubs after losing those three to them. Let's see what they do next. Pirates, Braves, Nets, Marlins before the Mets again. Pile up the wins, pile up the series victories to take those wins, taking two, maybe three from the Pirates. If you look at it right now, you say, if you're not going to take all four, right, you got to take three from the Pittsburgh Pirates this weekend, beginning tomorrow, but the weekend overall with the four games, have to take a few of the games from the Pittsburgh Pirates. Bottom line, take three of them. If not, get greedy. Take all four. Do it. Take all four and go ahead and take the series.
All right, let's not get greedy here.
Well, like we did against the Cubs. We won all three against them.
I've told you this
before.
And
you warned everybody.
It wasn't even a warning. I'm not sitting here saying, well, Phillies are going to get swept. Bye-bye. You know what I mean?
You didn't say that. You just said, guys, these teams... The Phillies aren't necessarily all the way there all the time.
Correct.
Yet. So let's be careful of taking all the games.
And they're professional baseball teams, no matter how bad they are. There's 29 professional baseball teams in Major League Baseball, and then there's the Oakland A's. There's the likelihood is it's very, very difficult to sweep three-game series. It's even harder to sweep a four-game series. I can't ask for four.
Nah, give me three.
But I can justifiably ask for three. You are a substantially better team than the Pirates. There is a chance that as this series comes to a close, because you figure, right, 28, 29, 30, is there 31 days in July?
Yes,
31 days in July. You're talking about Sunday being the final day of July. There's a very likely chance. They've already made some moves. They've traded Vogelbach. They probably are going to trade more guys in the next couple of days. You may be looking at an incredibly depleted Pittsburgh team by the time that the series comes to an end. It is fair for me to ask for three.
Absolutely fair. It's absolutely fair.
I can't ask for four. That's unfair, but I can ask for three.
Absolutely fair to ask for three when you're looking at the Pirates and the Phillies. And again, saying, take notice of what you have going on here, which is, again, an opportunity to make the postseason and getting in by winning these series, continuing to win these series. Yes, got to take three from this team. Don't forget, Tim McManus is coming up, so we'll talk a little football there as well with Tim McManus, as we have a lot to talk to him about. Nick Sirianni speaks today. Jalen Hurts, what's the vibe? What has it been like? Now, these first couple of days with A.J. Brown there's a lot of confidence now with this team, and Tim being an ESPN guy as well, he sees it, where a lot of people, who was it, Ryan Clark on, what was it, Get Up? This morning, or First Take, one of the two?
Yeah, whatever one of those names where the shows are called.
He was
I can't get the show names
right.
I can't keep them in line.
He was simply talking about, though, them being a team that's going to win the division over the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, so the one thing I did find interesting, because you asked me, you're like, hey, is this arable audio? And quite frankly, it's probably not, because
He just ran off names
and acquisitions and things like that. But the one thing he said that was interesting was a comparison between the Eagles and the San Francisco 49ers and how the Eagles are building. And he said basically if you build the way that you're building, you don't need Aaron Rodgers. You don't need Tom Brady. You don't need Josh Allen. You don't need Patrick Mahomes. Do those guys help? Of course they do. But you have the ability to build a team around a quarterback and to elevate that quarterback's play because of the substantial talent around them. I think that that holds merit. If you're comparing a team to San Francisco, who's been to, what, three NFC championship games in the last decade?
Mm-hmm.
Won one, played in three. I mean, that's a pretty good ask, I think.
I think so. I think so. So, good stuff. Again, as we talk about the Phillies, the Eagles here, and we are about to get to Tim McManus and speak to Tim about the Philadelphia Eagles' first day reporting to camp. Had their first meeting last night, took the field today. Nick Sirianni spoke. He mentioned mountains, moving mountains, and all of that stuff. And a lot of people, of course, you know, just don't like to hear that from their head coach. They want him to be the adult in the room. Sound like Brett Brown saying Jimmy Butler is James. That was the adult. But see, when you say something like that, you want the player to also feel on the same page. And Jimmy said, nah, my name is Jimmy. I'm not James. Right? You know what I'm saying? So when you be careful what you ask for. Be careful what you ask for. All right. We come right back. We get our first training camp report from the NovaCare Complex as we check in with our guy, Tim McManus, next right here on the afternoon show, 97.5
The Fanatic. 97.5
The
Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
402-97.5 The Fanatic, the afternoon show, and the 4 p.m. hours brought to you by Landis Block, your one-stop shop to create a jaw-dropping outdoor paradise. That's online at landisbc.com. Devon Givens with you until 6 o'clock on the afternoon show, 610-632-0975. Well, we get the first day of camp today in the books, a short one, if you will, as far as length of time on the field for the players under Nick Sirianni, year number two. And we start off a trend that's going to be going on throughout the football season. Speaking with this man on the Comcast Business Hotline, he is from ESPN.com and 97.5 The Fanatic contributor, Burge Reporter, brought to you by...
It's brought to us by the new Bet Parks app. Everything you want in a digital casino and sportsbook in one sleek app. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
And that man is Tim McManus, joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. T-Mac, welcome back.
There he is. What's going on, Devon?
My man. How you doing?
Good. It's good to talk to you. It's been a while.
Always great to catch up with you, man. How was your summer?
It was
off-season.
Nice. You know, got some off-season. That's what they call it, right?
Yes.
Got some family time in, a little relaxation, some golf. So it's all good. Ready to rev up, and things got back and started today.
Yeah, man. So it was great to hear that you had a good one and back at it. We're going to be talking to you every week and every day this week for the remainder of the week, Thursday and Friday as well. But day one in the books, and Nick Sirianni did speak today. Tim, what did you take from his first press conference for this season as he gears up for his second year as head coach?
Yeah, kind of a new trend that started last year is that Howie Roseman joining Nick Sirianni at the podium for the first day. So we got to get the GM and the head coach on day one of training camp. And the first thing that stands out is that Sirianni walks out and he's got a Jalen Hurts shirt on with the Hurts' likeness, his face right in the center of it. I know a lot of fans have seen that one before. It's kind of interesting to me. I think that's where we'll start is, that yesterday they flashed an image of A.J. Brown getting out of his car to report to training camp, and he's wearing a hat that says Hurts season on it. And then Nick Sirianni walks out for his first press conference, and he's got a Jalen Hurts' face on his shirt. So clearly they're some of the top guys sending a message of support for Hurts, who has, you know, obviously is going in as the starter, but a lot of questions about his standing long term and those types of deals. So they're sending the message very early, you know, that we're in full support of Jalen Hurts here.
And part of that today also saying, Tim, a little bit earlier, running things that Jalen likes. So what's going to be different from last season to this season, whether it's either he play calling or Shane Steichen play calling, of running the things that they like for Jalen? Is this something that they all discussed in the offseason that they want to make sure that they get into it a lot more this one?
Well, sure, yeah. They're going to continue to tailor it to fit their QB1 strengths. That's something I think, you know, Sirianni did a nice job of eventually, and Steichen along with him, you know, recognizing what was best for that offense. You know, they made some strides in that area as the season went on. And I think what they want to throw the ball more this year. I mean, I don't think that's really any secret. It was successful when they had the run heavy scheme in the second half of the season, but I think that everybody kind of recognizes that they can't live there. So they need to figure out ways to have a more successful, more consistent passing attack. Certainly Hurts has been working all off season to get, make some strides in the accuracy department, working with some of the QB gurus in Southern California. Nick Sirianni has liked what he's seen, in that respect. The timing does seem to be a little bit sharper, at least in the very early on from what we've seen in the spring and then, just the first training camp practice today. And so, yeah, I mean, they're going to continue to work at that. And that's a huge part of this whole thing, Devon, is, you know, Jalen Hurts and can he get the accuracy numbers up? Can they get the passing attack rolling? That's certainly an emphasis that all offseason and that they'll be continuing to work on as we gear up for week one here.
Tim McMahon is joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline for our first training camp report. And Tim, as you talk about getting the offense going with the passing game a lot more this season, they addressed that big time in a big way by going out and getting one of the better wide receivers in the league and a close friend to Jalen Hurts, and that is A.J. Brown. What is the vibe like around the NovaCare complex with him now finally in the building officially as the season is about to get underway? Can you tell a difference in the excitement on the offensive side versus where they were a season ago, where it was Devontae Smith, Zach Ertz, and Dallas Goedert, and hoping for the others?
Yeah, and talked to Darius Slay today after practice and asked him kind of his initial read on A.J. Brown. And one thing that he noted was he's not a guy that likes to be running around in a T-shirt. Like he wants to have the pads on. He wants to be a physical presence. And that's something that he's going to add to this offense. I don't think there's any question about that. And we'll see sort of the full complement of that once they strap the pads on and they get into some real live game action. But I think he's going to be really good for Hurts. And you could see that they've been working on their connection. Brown said, you know, they got together countless times during the off season. And sure enough, one of the first plays during team drills today, it was mostly all red zone work. And, you know, Hurts struggled a little bit on the first day last year when it was also red zone work, but more crisp today. And his first touchdown pass goes to the left sideline, corner of the end zone, A.J. Brown. And that really got the fans going, the ones that were able to make it to NovaCare today. And so, yes, you know, energy was definitely kind of flowing today. And Hurts and Brown got off to a strong start.
That's great to hear. And as we also keep it going with the training camp and look at a lot of things, a lot of additions to the team outside of A.J. Brown, what kind of camp battles, Tim, would you say we need to pay attention to as we get things started? They're going to have the day off tomorrow, right? But after that, going forward, what camp battles should we keep our eye on?
Yeah, just the walk through tomorrow. But, you know, the one that is kind of circled that seems to be the most up in the air would be right guard. And that's with Isaac Seumalo and Jack Driscoll presumably being battling it out over the course of the summer to see who gets that role. And today, significantly, Seumalo was the first one to get those first team reps. We'll see if that they end up kind of trading as the days go on, but Seumalo gets the first crack at it. And safety is the other one that's kind of up in the air today. Anthony Harris was one of a number of guys that was sidelined or not a full participant because of COVID. And so, you know, you have Marcus Epps, who's in there and did a nice job today. He had a diving interception of Jalen Hurts in the red zone, in the end zone, was able to pull that one off, probably the defensive play of the day. And then how is that going to fill out? It was Kayvon Wallace that was the starter alongside of Epps today. We know that Jaquiski Tartt was signed, former San Francisco 49er, to compete in that area too. So those are kind of the primary ones when we're talking about who's going to see significant playing time. And then, of course, there's the wide receiver depth battles. Mm. Like Jalen Reagor, he was working with the second team today. It was been a bit of a fall from grace from him. We know that he's struggled over the first 2 years. He's got to find a niche on this team if he's going to make it. So this is a very important training camp for Jalen Reagor.
It absolutely is. And as you talk about find a one for us, Tim, Marcus Epps, when you look at him, where does he simply fit? Because you see the players and the teammates backing him, but then on the outside, we look at him as a third safety. I know I'll raise my hand and say that has been for me. That's where I'm comfortable with him. But could he be someone that steps in for Roddy McLeod on that side and give you some starting snaps?
The Eagles seem to think so. And Roseman brought him up today as a guy that they're high on. I know that there is skepticism on the outside. Certainly, I've been a part of that. And I think that most people, when they analyze this roster, they look at the safety position and say, I don't know, man. Like, that one looks like the shakiest. And some of that is because Epps isn't a really proven player, but the inside seems to view him differently than externally. And let's see if they're right. But I think that he's going to have a chance to start opposite Harris. I mean, it could be that way, depending on how this summer goes. So that's kind of like a key area that you're highlighting there, man, is, the defensive line looks solid, right? The linebacking position looks, probably better than it's been in years. I think that most people feel good about the cornerbacks with Darius Slay and Bradbury and Avante Maddox. Like, that seems good. But safety, a giant question mark sits over that. And so as we kind of, the days go by this summer, a lot of keen eyes are going to be on that safety spot, and Epps in particular, to see if he can take that jump. And, he got off to a really good start today by making a defensive play of the day.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And you're right, the defensive line looks strong, the depth overall. And they brought my arch nemesis back, Tim. So
your boy Barnett. back, baby.
He's back. He's going to wind up giving me a jersey before he leaves. Watch.
He's going to give you something. I don't know.
Well, Tim, as always, man, I look forward to, as I'm here for the remainder of the week, I look forward to talking with you, man, and hopefully a lot more going forward throughout this 22 campaign. Thanks as always, and we'll check in with you tomorrow. Thanks so much, man.
Absolutely, man. Always my pleasure. Talk to you soon, Devon.
All right, you got it. Tim McManus joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Comcast Business, every day in business is a big day. Let Comcast Business keep you ready for what's next. And Tim McManus was brought to us by
the new Bet Parks app. Everything you want in a digital casino and sports book on one sleek app. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Marcus Epps.
You know I'm a Marcus Epps guy.
And I said it. And I like him as a third safety. There have been so many people that have elevated themselves from a backup position to a starting role.
Right.
And have done a really nice job. I like him where he was. Now I need to see it as a starter. They believe it. Okay, now he has to show us all on the outside.
So, it's funny. When I sit here and I try to tell you my guys, the guys I think are going to be successful, the guys that I feel comfortable in, the guys that I feel confident in moving forward, they're at times, or most of the time, I have tangible evidence to back it up. I have statistical evidence to back it up. Like, I watched Josh Sweat. I'm big on Josh Sweat, too. I've been a big Josh Sweat guy for a long time. I watch Josh Sweat, and I see him on the field, and even if the statistical numbers don't back it up, I watch him and the motor. I watch him and the ability to get in and around the, near the football, at the quarterback, in the play. I don't have any tangible evidence to tell you that I think Marcus Epps can be the guy. It's one of the very few times in my life in this job where I'm sitting here telling you it's a gut feeling. I just have a gut feeling.
I like it.
That Marcus Epps can be, and I'm not sitting here trying to say he's going to be Brian Dawkins. He's not going to be Ed Reed. He's not going to be Troy Polamalu. But I do think that he can be a serviceable starter for this team.
He needs to be steady.
Correct. Much like we were talking about with Alec Boehm. Steady, consistent, make the plays in front of you.
Yep.
I think he can do that.
Yep. And when you have the outside that we're talking about with Slay and Bradberry and then Avante Maddox, who, you know, they trust as well. And the slot, we do. We all do.
Yeah.
As a slot corner, it does absolutely feel good to know that they feel good internally. Where externally, we may have the questions. Again, myself, Tim said he has been a part of that. He's been guilty of that a little bit. It does feel good knowing that others feel good about Marcus Epps in that building and how they feel about him. I love to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing. I've been saying this for a while, and again, it's just a gut thing, but I think that I feel much more comfortable with him on the one side than whatever the plan is
Wallace or Harris
on the other side. Right. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'm not so sure. They may be in a position where they end up going with two guys that may be more suited for the strong safety spot, and they just have two of them out there, and Tart ends up being your starter.
Nah, I understand, man, and it's interesting. It's going to be fun to see exactly how it plays out when the season gets underway. This training camp battles, they're going to be fun. There are going to be so many of them, but hey, we'll see how it all comes together. I do like Marcus Epps as a player, and we got to thank everybody for listening on 97.5 The Fanatic all afternoon. We want to welcome the audience from the television side. Thank you so much for joining us after the Phillies game, after the Phillies post-game coverage with Ricky and Mike, and we thank everybody for checking in. Phillies with a big win and a big series victory overall, taking 2 of 3 from the Atlanta Braves to end the homestand as they get ready to go on the road for a few games with Pittsburgh next up as well for 4 games. So the Phillies win. They take a 7-2 victory today. They are now 51-47. And we have been talking about the Phillies and the Eagles. So we welcome the television audience in. And if you want to join us at 610-632-0975, does the series win over the Braves take away a bit of that sting of being swept by the Chicago Cubs, the first series back from the All-Star break? Does that kind of make you feel a little bit better? And look, the Cubs have won 6 in a row, so maybe that makes you feel a little bit better as well. But the Phillies take the series 51-47. They are tied with the Cardinals at 51-47 for third in that wild card spot. Once again, only 3.5 games back of the San Diego Padres, 7 overall behind the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. And the Braves are at the top of the wild card spots, the standings right now in the National League. So 610-632-0975. Phillies with a big win. They put up 5 in the 5th to take a 5-0 advantage over the Atlanta Braves this afternoon. They got to, the pitching overall with Charlie Morton, 10 hits in total on the Braves. Charlie Morton, five innings pitched, 4 earned runs given up, 5 strikeouts, 2 walks. But Kyle Gibson, he walks away with the victory, only allowing them 2 runs on 5 hits. And they did commit 2 errors, did the Atlanta Braves, for the Phillies to take this win. 5 in the 5th, 2. They matched the Atlanta Braves, who came back and got 2. Well, the Phillies said, okay, no problem, cool. We'll take 2 more and take those right back. A 7-2 advantage at that point, and they did not give up anything after that to the Atlanta Braves. So good win. Good showing from Alec Boehm, who was the player of the game with his batting today. He went 2 for 4 on the afternoon, running in 2 hits, 2 RBI, 2 runs scored. He is now up to 293. Did strike out 2 times. We'll look at that. That's no big deal. No problem at all. And in his last 4 starts, Kyle Gibson dropped from 491 to 469. Thanks, Tyler, with his earned run average overall. So good showing from him today. We also got an RBI from Kyle Schwarber. 2 from JT Realmuto, who went 2 for 4 on the afternoon. Nick Castellanos went 1 for 4 with a run scored. And we mentioned the 2 RBI from Alec Boehm. Didi Gregorius and Odubel Herrera also mixed in an RBI as well on the afternoon. So we would love to continue the conversation with everyone with the Phillies win 7-2 over the Atlanta Braves. 610-632-0975. So you're still maneuvering and weaving through that traffic in South Philadelphia. We'll take your phone calls as you're driving home, feeling good about a good victory, a good series win over the Atlanta Braves this afternoon. We're also talking about the Philadelphia Eagles and the positional battles a little bit. You heard Tim McManus talk about it. The linebackers look good. That's improved. The depth depth overall on the defensive line. That looks pretty good. The questions are going to be right there with the Philadelphia Eagles safety position and wondering where things go from there, from Epps to Harris to Wallace and Tartt. Where are they going to go from there? So we've been talking about the birds as well, but now joining us on the television side, we also want to keep the Phillies conversation going since we are following the game, following post-game, to get your thoughts on a good series win and a good victory this afternoon over the Atlanta Braves. Now 51-47 tied with the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Cardinals in general, as we are tied 51-47 with them, they take on the 54-43 Toronto Blue Jays tonight in Toronto, and we'll see how they fare tonight to see if the Phillies can take a half-game lead on them in the standings for the wild card position. Let's go to Reed and Charlotte, though, joining us next on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia. Reed, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on? What's going on, gentlemen?
How you feeling?
Man, I'm incredible, brother. Appreciate you asking. I want to talk some, well, you talked about, I heard Tim McManus, obviously, but the safety position. Now, your partner was talking about unseen evidence. I think he showed us last year he was always around the ball in terms of Epps. You know, obviously, we didn't hear 28th number being called at all as a safety. I don't think that's a good thing. I thought him coming over from Minnesota, he would make more plays. So hopefully this year you'll hear a lot more from Harris.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Epps, with the playing time he's gotten the last 2 years, 2 years ago on special teams last year in the rotation, I think he's ready, man. I think he's ready to start.
And again, I've been critical of them deciding that that's where they want to go. However, we've seen it, as I mentioned so many times, Reed, where players, they jump up from that reserve role into the starting role, and they look really good in that job. So I am interested to see how it goes. And, hey, he's a good player, man, as a reserve, as a third safety. But who is he as a starting safety? That's the key here. And if he does win the job, hey, more power to him.
I think he'll win it. And I wanted to mention the linebacking court. I haven't been excited about our linebackers like this in a long time. I mean, you look at Dean, Kazir White. It's a very quiet signing, but he was a full-time starter for Chargers last year, made plays. You know, Reddick, obviously. You know, I mean, I think from an athletic and maneuverability standpoint on defense, he's got a lot more to work with. And, hopefully, you know, some of the attacking style that we're used to here, he can bring that back and not play so much zone coverage in terms of, you know, our linebackers and our secondary. So I'm excited about the defense, man. The line is going to be spectacular. We got an 8-man rotation on the line.
Deep.
Everybody can stay fresh. Yeah.
Yep.
So, hey, man, I appreciate you guys taking my call.
Thank you, Reed. Appreciate you making it, man. It's going to be some exciting times for the Philadelphia Eagles once we get things started. Camp and play, preseason, and then we get at it in September, and a lot of high expectations for this football team coming in, not only internally as far as the city goes and the Philadelphia Eagle fans, but also externally with this football squad. On the other side, we get to our baseball man. That will be Jason Stark. He joins us at 4:30. We'll talk about the game today and so much more as we have our weekly visit from Jason Stark here on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia. I'm Devon Givens, the afternoon show. Jason Stark on the other side.
97.5 The Fanatic.
NBC Sports Philadelphia is the afternoon show. I'm Devon Givens in for Tyrone Johnson. Tyler Zuli in for Jen Scordo, 610-632-0975. But every week on a Wednesday, got to talk a little baseball with our guy from The Athletic, senior writer. Does a great job as always as we check in on the Phils, who just took two of three from the Atlanta Braves and rebounding, if you will, after the sweep by the Chicago Cubs to start off the second half of the season. We do go to the Comcast Business Hotline and check in with our friend Jason Stark, who is brought to us by Everfresh Juices and Juice Drinks, Everfresh Nature's Refreshment. As always, Jay, how you doing, man?
I am good, Devon. What's happening?
What's happening is I just looked at this tweet where the Mega Millions is at $1 billion, Jason.
That's got your name written all over it, Devon.
Yes, it does. And as my friend, I will buy something for you. Yes.
What do you got in mind?
You know what? You know, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it off the air. We'll bring it up on the air. We'll talk about it more off the air, what you need. Yes.
Yeah, after you win your $1 billion, you'll be hearing from me.
$1 billion. I can't wait to do that. Well, listen, man, I couldn't wait to talk to you because, look, they take 2 of 3 after rebounding from the sweep from the Chicago Cubs. The Phils come in and they take 2 of 3 this afternoon, a 7-2 victory. And we're starting to see some them getting back on track with taking the series. What do you make of what they did so far through the 6 games and more specifically against the Braves?
Well, you know, I don't know when you start saying these series are huge, they're critical, they're pivotal, pick your favorite adjective. But, you know, if they lose this game, that'd be back-to-back series losses at home coming out of the break. It means you're 9 games behind the Braves. Not that they're going to catch the Braves. Not that they're going to catch the Mets. I think those two teams are definitively better. But this wild card race matters. Winning games leading up to the deadline matters. You know, the Giants are starting to head south. There's some speculation they could even sell. They're under 500 now, which means you're in a fight with the Cardinals, and if the Padres fall back into catchability, it's 3 teams for 2 spots. I think they are well positioned if the deadline goes the way they would script it. But I think when you get to July 27th?
Yes.
Every year, I think whoever makes the best deal in the next week probably winds up playing in October.
Yeah, so Jay, you know, now that we are 6 days away from the deadline on the 2nd, and we sit here and we look at it, and when we talk about this, how should they look at it? Because as you said, there could be some sellers, but there are also things going on around the league where other players are getting hurt on other teams. They may also be interested in acquiring players as well. So how will a general manager go about, in this case, Dave Dombrowski, of trying to figure out when to pull that trigger if he wants to be first and get in there before others start to jump and then you see what the prospects have to be, what the price is?
Well, Dave's made a lot of calls already, and teams know what he's looking for. Mm-hmm. I have a pretty good feel who he's looking for. And it's just been a brutally slow market because there aren't enough sellers. But first thing you have to remember is the urgency to win this year, to make the playoffs, to pull the plug on that decade without playing in October, everybody feels it. Dave feels it. He's going to do what he needs to do to get better. You know, his remarks the other day were interesting because it's obvious that they're not in go-for-it mode. They're not in, you know, trade the whole system for Juan Soto mode. But they're going to be active. I've talked to a number of teams they've talked to. Dave is wheeling that shopping cart down multiple aisles. Do you want me to start going through what I believe they're looking for?
Sure, yes, please.
All right, I see 3 aisles in the supermarket where they're shopping. One is rotation, especially in the wake of Zach Eflin. They're looking for a number 3, number 4 type starter, someone who can start a playoff game, someone ideally who could start game 3 of a best of 3. So, I mean, it won't be Luis Castillo because he's the top of this market. But then after him, Tyler Mahle, Noah Syndergaard, Chad Kuhl, someone like that. Be really surprised if they don't come away with someone who fits that description. Second aisle is bullpen. Again, if they were going to draw it up, it would be a true closer at an affordable cost. You know, you get so many relievers out there, Devon. It's conceivable somebody falls through the cracks and, you know, they get that guy they need, Daniel Bard, somebody like that, at a bargain rate. I would say it's more likely they trade for somebody who is profiled to pitch the 7th inning or the 8th inning, and that could be just about anybody. I mean, there are dozens of relievers on the market. There will be affordable options. I think Dave will wait on that because the last day you're going to see some panic, I think. And then the third aisle is one that we haven't talked about much, but that's center field. What I'm hearing is This would be a glove type center fielder as opposed to a thumper. I mean, when you got Kyle Schwarber and Nick Castellanos playing in the corners, somebody who closes the gaps, since there's such big gaps, is important. Sure. I've thought that for a while they needed that guy. And this could be one of a number of players. Michael A. Taylor, Victor Robles, Jose Siri, Christian Pache, Jake Marisnick. I'm throwing out names. It won't be Brian Reynolds, but somebody who can catch the ball in center field, with maybe some athleticism, so you don't mind playing them. I think that's what they're trying to do, those three items. Mm. Look, the issue is clear. If they don't want to give up their best guys, this is challenging. Painter and Abel, they're not just no, they're hell no. Griff McGarry, Logan O'Hoppe, Ben Brown, they've said no on all of them from what I'm hearing. So I don't know how easy it'll be to get with what they want with their next tier of prospects, because teams aren't fans of that tier.
Yes.
But Dave Dombrowski knows how to make a deal, and I expect him to make multiple deals.
Jason Stark joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline with us on his weekly visit on Wednesday. And Jason, as you say that, I had to ask you of the three aisles that he's shopping, rotation, bullpen, and center fielder, what are the chances that they walk away with two by the deadline, and maybe something a little bit lower with the center fielder or a little bit lower with the bullpen, but rotation being the top there, the chances that they walk away with two?
Well, it's possible. You don't know how this is going to unfold.
Right.
I'd be really surprised if they don't get a starter and a reliever. I mean, they could probably survive with Matt Vierling and Odubel, but I think they clearly want to move on from Odubel, upgrade from Odubel. Yeah. So that I think that can be done. Look around. I mean, we've had two trades this month, too.
Yes.
So it's been a really weird environment.
And as far as today goes, and even more recently with the players on the current roster, Bryson Stott, young player, as we know, playing second base today, he goes 1-for-3 with a run scored and a walk, and he's at 195. But we've seen him come up big, Jason, in big spots for the Phillies, hitting the three-run home run on Monday as well, and we've seen him with some other big spots as well, getting across the plate. Does he have that clutch gene in him?
Devon, that's a great question. I don't think we know yet whether he has the clutch gene. He's 200 plate appearances into his career, but I do think we can see that he has the baseball gene.
Mm-hmm.
He just has a feel for how to play. The quality of his bats is excellent. Really good bat-to-ball skills. I think he's at 15 strikeouts in his last 150 plate appearances. That's incredible for a young player in this day and age. I mean, that translates to striking out 50 times a year. You're seeing a lot of hard hit balls. Not as many have turned into hits as I think you would expect, but good swings, good at-bats, in big spots. Excellent two-strike approach. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens when Didi Gregorius comes back.
Gene Segura.
This guy has to get playing time, doesn't he?
Yeah, and you mean Gene Segura when he does come back and get in?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yep. How does that play out?
To him and Didi when Gene Segura comes back.
Exactly. Right, yeah, he has to be on the field at some point, right, because he continues the hit.
Yeah, you could juggle three spots, Boehm, Stott, Didi at short and third, but I mean Didi's been off the IL now for 6-7 weeks, and he's still hitting under 200. I haven't seen the power we've seen in the past. Defense has been better, but I mean the best offensive players on their team of late have been Boehm and Stott. Why would you take those two guys out?
Right, and what do you do with Boehm now? As you said, one of the best offensive players. He does it again, player of the game today. He's now at 293 overall with his average. Two runs scored today, two RBI, 2-for-4. and he just continues to start playing. He's playing good baseball, Jason. So do you look to possibly move him up in the order, leave him where he is? Nick Castellanos, who has got some hits over the, you know, since the break, but what do you do?
Well, it's complicated, you know. This is the best stretch of Alec Bohm's career since his rookie season, it feels like. You know, he's hitting .439 this month. No Philly has had an average that high in any month since Jim Eisenreich in 1996. But I think the issue is there's more to lineup construction than, hey, this guy's hot, that guy's cold, let's move him around. A big issue when Joe Girardi was here was just too much volatility in the lineup and where guys hit, and it was an issue in that clubhouse. Rob Thompson's very conscious of that. But look, Gene Segura is coming back next week if all goes well, and that opens up the opportunity to redesign this lineup. I don't know exactly how they'll go. I mean, if you get vintage Gene Segura, maybe he hits first and Bohm hits second. There are lots of combinations. I mean, you'd like to leave Kyle Schwarber at the top, but when he's going 5 for 62, which is where he is right now, he's not exactly your prototypical leadoff hitter.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's not happening that way. Well, Jason, great stuff. Great information in there, especially with the trade deadline. Look forward to seeing how that all plays out and hearing from you next week when it all does, in fact, go down for the Phillies and everyone else in Major League Baseball. Make sure you all read Jason at The Athletic and in the Starkville Pod as well, and hearing him next Wednesday. Jason, great to talk to you these last 2 weeks, and I'll be listening next week going forward.
You too, Devon. It'll be interesting to see who's on this team in a week and what you're going to do with your $1 billion in a week.
I'll be calling you just to let you know that we did win, and I got you covered.
Okay, it's a plan.
You got it, man. Thanks, Jason. It's always great to talk to you. Jason Stark joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Comcast Business, every day in business is a big day. Let Comcast Business keep you ready for what's next. Ah, man, how about that? And Jason was brought to you, us by Everfresh Juices and Juice Drinks, Everfresh Nature's Refreshment. We have a lot to talk about with what Jason said. When we get back, we'll do that with Tyler Zuli and Tyler in Springfield as well, and everybody else on the phone line, 610-632-0975. Shopping in the aisles for the Phillies. We have a lot to talk about with that when we get back. The afternoon show, 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports. Let's get a poll update from Tyler Zuli, which is brought to you by Paul B. Moyer & Sons in Doylestown, PA. As we talked to Little Birds a lot earlier, that is our Twitter poll. Tyler.
Yeah, so the question is, do you 100% feel comfortable with Nick Sirianni as the Eagles head coach heading into the 2022 season? Got about 45 minutes left to vote on this thing. 416 votes so far. 61% of the votes say yes. 34% of the votes say not yet, need to see a little bit more. 5% now say no. So 95% of the people are at least, I guess, cautiously optimistic.
And willing to give him the chance.
Right, yeah, and that's the thing, is they're not sitting here saying, nah, he's weird, he's kind of goofy, he says mountains and flowers, and I'm out.
And I'll
I'm
tell
good.
You what.
I'll take that.
Just for the audience that's just joining us on the television side, we had a lot of positive calls about Nick Sirianni earlier.
A lot of positive
earlier,
calls.
Despite the mountains and the flowers,
yep,
and all those things, and the Nerf basketball in the meetings with the free agents or draftees, possible prospects, a lot of positive results on the phones as far as Nick Sirianni. But as far as the Phillies go, and we'll get to Tyler here shortly from Springfield, but Jason Stark's saying they're going for it again. And Dombrowski knows it. The organization knows it. The coaching staff, the players know it. The drought that they've been on, they have to get to the postseason. They're fighting for this third and final wild card spot. And he labeled it, termed it as aisles, the aisles that they're shopping in as the trade deadline approaches on the 2nd, which will be next Tuesday, 6 days away. Let's give it to people again if they didn't hear it. Number one, the rotation, a third or fourth starter. So right there, they're trying to improve either Ranger Suarez or Kyle Gibson, where they feel like they can have a decent high-level third starter behind Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler. Second, bullpen, a true closer to close the games out. Everybody else will be there, setups and all, a true closer for the Phillies that they could possibly get their hands on by next Tuesday. And a center fielder, glove type, not necessarily worried about the bat, more of that range when you have Schwarber on your right side as the center fielder, Schwarber on your right, and on your left, Nick Castellanos. You have some range there that you can cover that ground. Kind of made me think a little bit of, and even though we know he was a better hitter, like Shane Victorino, where you have that guy who can, he has that range in center field back in the day that can get to either side and cover a lot of ground for those two players. And Tyler, you, the producer, Tyler Zuli, we'll get to Tyler in Springfield in just a second. You know, you've been talking about this where it doesn't have to be a guy with a bat specifically, but someone defensively that can do the job out there for the Phillies.
Well, yeah, would you like somebody who could hit, you know, at a 270, 280 clip?
Sure.
Of course you would. Yes. We all would. We'd all love to sit here and say, but you have to understand that there are multiple things that happen in order for a trade to go down, no matter who's trading and who's, you know, who whom you're trading. You have to have a player who, A, you're willing to take, B, they're willing to give up, and C, you're willing to match what the return is going to be. I am not looking for somebody who's going to be Shane Victorino in center field, hit two or six, and, you know, be a guy who's going to come up with clutch at bats and be a guy who's going to be, you know, your 270, 280 hitter, and you can trust this guy in your lineup every day. At this point, like Jason was talking about, I need one of two things. I either need somebody to be a solid hitter, give me 250, give me 260, or I need somebody who I know is going to be a defensive plus, a defensive net rating positive when you get down the stretch, which is why if they're going to go that route, the one guy I've been saying for a long time, I'm really glad that he brought him up, was Christian Pache from the A's. You know, obviously he was a highly touted Atlanta prospect. It didn't quite work out there. They traded him in the deal to get Matt Olson. He's not hitting well in Oakland, but I think that he's a guy that could give you, you know, solidified center field defensive play every single day. And you know he's going to hit ninth. You know he's going to hit 200, but he's the guy that you can trust to make the plays out there.
It's going to be a good glove.
Going to be a really good glove.
It's going to be a really good glove. All right, 610-632-0975. What did you make of what Jason Stark shared with us there and with his visit? We'll take your phone calls on that going forward until 6 o'clock on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia. We go to Tyler in Springfield right now joining us. What's up, Tyler? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Thank you.
I'm doing good. I'm so happy that the Phillies won, and I'm so happy that, you know, that the Eagles are doing good. I'm just going to be happy.
Well, yeah, I think, again, taking two of three from the Braves, that will make a lot of people happy coming off that Chicago series where they were swept. And then looking at the Philadelphia Eagles, just simply getting back. And you look at some of the video that's out there, one specifically from the social media account of the Eagles, where you do have that connection that Tim McManus was talking about, Jalen Hurts to A.J. Brown for a score in the end zone. And that's going to get a lot of people excited and make Tyler, like yourself and many others, very happy.
Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be a good option because I like to see the Eagles win, and I like to see the Eagles do good. So, you know.
No question, man. Thanks so much, man. Really appreciate it, Tyler. And, yeah, just to hear the stuff that Jason was talking about. But then I saw that video from the Eagles that they put out on the social media account, the connection between the two friends, Jalen Hurts to A.J. Brown for the score. I think that hopefully that's a theme that's going to be there for a lot of the season. I don't know how many times. I don't know that there's going to be double-digit touchdowns for A.J. Brown, but the connection overall, whether it's between the end zone, you know, the goal line on each side, all of that, we just want to see a lot of positive play between the two. That's going to be one that we're all going to be watching. Kevin in Delaware, hang tight. We are going to get you when we get back. Josh and everyone else that's there on the phone line, 610-632-0975. As always, you can join us on Twitter at Tyler Zuli to reach Tyler at 97.5 The Fanatic for our station account and at Devon G 975 as well, as we talk both Phillies and their big win over the Braves this afternoon, 7-2, to take the series 2-3, and the Philadelphia Eagles first day of practice on the field. Only 58 minutes of work, but they got the work. But now we have video, and now we can get excited for football. We'll keep it going. The 5 o'clock hour underway. Leftovers with Tyler Zuli as well on the back end of the hour before we step away for the afternoon. That'll be upcoming right here, 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia.
97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5, The Fanatic.
The 5 o'clock hours brought to you by Guida Door and Window. Take advantage of Guida Door and Window's big summer sales event. Receive 40% off all windows and doors. Call 1-877-GO-GUIDA or visit GOGUIDA.com. And we do have a little Sixers news, Tyler. That we already knew about, but it's actually official.
Oh, it's officially official.
It's officially official. Do you have to actually play the officially official sounder? Nah, we already did
I don't
that.
Think so.
Yeah. James Harden is officially official back with the Philadelphia 76ers. Yes. Wow.
I am stunned. This is my stunned face.
Yes, he is. Are you surprised?
As I try to stare as deadpan into the camera as possible. No, I'm not surprised. We all knew this was coming.
Yeah, so there you have it. James Harden is officially re-signed with the Philadelphia 76ers. So good news. Well, until the trade deadline and we know what happens. But the Sixers, the Phillies do take 2 of 3 from the Braves. The Birds are back. And there's a lot of great stuff to talk about. Look forward to the Union. They're doing their part. And we, of course, just wait for the Flyers. Catch up.
Who?
Catch up.
Who?
Catch up.
Catch up.
There you go.
On burgers?
Sure.
That kind of catch up?
If you want.
With your fries?
Burgers, fries, cheesesteaks, whatever you want. There you go. Some might put it on pizza.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Four for four. Phillies, Eagles, Sixers, Union.
Oh, man. All right.
People are going to hate me for that.
Of course. Of course. And the fact that I just said you put ketchup on pizza. Not me.
Wait. I totally didn't even hear that part.
Yeah, whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do. I'm not doing it. All right. 610-632-0975.
By the way, I know we got to get to all of our friends on the phone. Can I give you a tweet real quick?
Sure.
So we get a tweet. Just said their name is B. So B, if you're still listening, to clarify what we were talking about, he says, why would the Phillies get a center fielder that can't hit, why would they get a center fielder that can't hit SMH? That was the dumbest take I ever heard in my life. Get a real center fielder who can hit for contact and play the field, quit being cheap, and build the team. Stop wasting Bryce Harper's career. So, real quick, just to clarify what we were talking about.
Please,
Jason Stark was telling us that if they go the direction of getting a center fielder, it feels like it's not going to be of the capacity of like an Andrew Benintendi, because he said they're not giving up their top three prospects, and I think that they're going to get outbid for a player like that. He was saying that there may be a defensive-minded center fielder in mind. And that's why I said, if that's the case and that's the way that they're going, Christian Pache would be the guy that I would choose. That's where we were getting with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But look, again, you know how it goes. I mean, just not going to please everybody. You may want a specific player in return. That's who you want. And even though Jason Stark laid it out.
I want Willie Mays in his prime.
Doesn't do anything. I get it. Now, when we see and they make the postseason, maybe that will change the mind.
Give me Ichiro when he moves to center field. That's all I'm accepting.
Yep. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Kevin in Delaware. Wants to talk about Jalen Hurts and the pressure on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia. Kev, how you doing?
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Well, thank you.
Let me say my piece, and then I'll hang up, because I am really pissed about these other sports stations. Well, when they talk about Philly.
Are you talking about national? Like, you talking about national
NFL
stuff?
NFL Network and ESPN.
All right.
When they talk about Philly, all they talk about is pressure on Jalen Hurts. Is he the guy? They don't talk about getting AJ Brown, the offensive line being healthy, stealing a cornerback from the Giants. It's always Jalen Hurts.
It's the one big unknown about the football team, and you know how important the quarterback is. We still have questions about the quarterback. So I've also heard nationally, which I typically don't care about that stuff, but where a lot of people have looked at this football team and said they're going to be a surprise of the NFL, not just the NFC, but the NFL. So I think it is fair to look at them and say that there is pressure, knowing that they have gone and gotten him, A.J. Brown, and making sure that the offensive line is put together nicely to protect him and allow the running game to also be a part of it, Kev, to look at him and say that there is pressure on him, especially if he wants to be looked at as the future quarterback of this team.
Okay, if you can't play sports without having fun, then you don't need to be playing sports.
Well, nobody said he wasn't going to have fun, but it was just talking about him simply taking over as the guy going forward. There is pressure on him. Kev, there is pressure on the starting quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles to deliver. Wow. All right, Kev got a little, you know, a little frustrated. There is pressure.
Well, of course there is.
It's the nature of the position.
It's the most, I think it's the most pressure-inducing position in all of sports. It's just how this thing works.
And guess
right?
what? He might be able to handle it. He might be. He has the demeanor, right? He's very tough-minded.
Of course.
He might be able to handle it.
He
already
has
the belief from his veteran teammates and the front office to give him a shot again. They may have tried to get others to replace him. That also tells you that there's pressure to do the job, or else you may be replaced if you don't step up to the challenge and live up to the expectations that we have for you, not just outside, externally, but internally. To do the job,
I get his point in saying that they're like micro focused on one thing, the Jalen Hurts thing. The success or failure of the Eagles falls squarely on the shoulders of Jalen Hurts. Which I get that would be frustrating as a Philadelphian on the outside looking in or the inside looking out to the national perspective.
Right,
I totally get all that, but we have to be honest with ourselves. The pressure is there; it has to be there.
Yes.
You know, for any quarterback, it's not just Jalen Hurts. Look around the league and teams that have, you know, a need to make another jump. Do you not like? Don't you think there's pressure on Kyler Murray? Don't you think there's pressure on whomever is the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers? Don't you think there's pressure on Matt Ryan in
Absolutely.
Indianapolis? All of these teams have these guys have pressure on them to take that jump because it's what's expected of them. Or not to take the jump in Matt Ryan's case, but to, you know, to have the team take the jump and not miss the playoffs again. Jalen Hurts is not the exception to the rule when it comes to who deserves pressure and who doesn't. Almost every quarterback in the league has pressure.
Man, look, Kev, I understand how frustrating it may be to check out that stuff and hear it talk that way. I mean, look, when you listen on the Fanatic, we talk about the pressure. When you look at NBC Sports Philadelphia, Birds Huddle, which will be up next, right, Ty, at 6 p.m.
Yes.
You have to have that conversation because there is pressure there for Jalen Hurts to get the job done for the Philadelphia Eagles. Not just this season, but for his future, his job, security going forward. It just is. 610-632-0975. Josh in Huntington Valley next on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia. Hey, Josh.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Pretty good.
I just got to say, after the first day of practice, training camp, I'm very happy Eagles football is back. I am very excited for what's coming with this team. And, you know, even just on the first day, the energy, the vibes, everything just seemed together and like they were all there. And, you know, Sirianni's second year coming around. I have very high expectations for this team, but it's very good to see from the start that this team already looks together.
Well, yeah, look, man, I mean, it's early, an hour practice, but they seem, the vibes are good, as they say. The vibes are good right now, Josh. Nothing has been done where it would upset you, upset me, upset Tyler, upset the Eagle fan base overall. All we're going to see right now is some good things, and we'll watch the camp battles. We'll see these videos of the throws from Hurts to Brown, but we also need to hear the things where there was a missed pass, there was a misread, and there was a fumble, because we want to hear it all, but in general, Josh, it's just great to have football back. Yes, it is.
100%.
Yep, and what do you believe this team could possibly do?
I'm getting a little bit of the 2017 Super Bowl run type of feeling.
Now, beforehand, did you know that they were a Super Bowl caliber team? Not a winner, but a caliber team that could get to the Super Bowl before they actually got there.
With Wentz having that season before he went down with his knee injury, yes.
Now, as the season progressed, yes.
MVP favorite.
Yes, as the season went along, but preseason, where we are right now, training camp, did you look at them as that type of team?
I probably wouldn't say Super Bowl, but definitely a team that could make a run.
I did not, yeah. I'm with you. Playoff team, maybe. And once he got rolling, once they won those 9 games in a row, Josh, I'm with you. They did look like a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, and with the way our schedule's laid out this season, there's no reason it can't be the same thing.
Is there pressure on Jalen Hurts? We just talked to Kevin about it. He doesn't
listen to that. Yeah.
Do you believe there's pressure on Jalen Hurts?
Yes. I mean, he's got everything around him, and that's what the media is going to do. They're going to make it seem worse than it is, but he knows what he's got to do. He went to two big powered colleges, and he knows what pressure's like.
He does.
I'm not worried about him, and he's going to get the job done. And he's going to prove a lot of people wrong.
Listen, Josh, great call, man. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the season. Hope we talk before then, but enjoy the season overall. I mean, look, man, that's part of the game. It's part of the deal. It's what happens when you are a professional quarterback. And yes, you went to two universities where there's big-time pressure, big-time programs, and to see if you can live up to it. I think he can because he has that in him. It's about the performance that ultimately plays out. And we're going to talk about it, again, as we mentioned on the station. We're going to talk about it on NBC Sports Philadelphia. It's part of the deal. It's how it goes.
It has to be.
How it goes.
I mean, think about it. If we're talking about...
Every quarterback has pressure.
The positions,
Pat Mahomes has pressure to rebound from a poor showing in that exit in the AFC playoffs.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a bad season. I'm talking about
the playoffs. The pressure is to bounce back. It may not be for the full 17 games. It's about when they get back there, how do you respond to that? Or how do you respond to Josh Allen as being now the darling quarterback?
Sure.
Joe Burrow, the darling quarterback. How do you respond? That's pressure on Pat Mahomes.
There's pressure. I mean, I could give you probably a handful of quarterbacks, literally a handful of quarterbacks in the league that don't have pressure on them, and I bet you most of them play for bad football teams. Just off the top of my head, I'm going to give you a couple. Justin Fields doesn't have any pressure because the Bears stink.
Not yet.
Even with him being a first-round pick, like I saw a graphic with the receivers he's got. It's Darnell Mooney and like me and you. Davis Mills has no pressure. We expect Houston to stink. But even there's some teams that aren't very good.
I'll give you a bad team that does have pressure with the quarterback.
I think I know where you're going to go.
Daniel Jones.
Oh, I wasn't going to go there.
I'm going Daniel Jones.
I go Trevor Lawrence. Is a bad team that's got pressure on him after trying to have a bounce back season with Doug Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a handful of guys in the league that don't have an immense amount of pressure, or at least a handful of a big, proportion of pressure on them. And most of those teams are not very good. Like, does Geno Smith or Drew Lock have pressure?
Nah.
Probably not, right?
Not really.
But every other quarterback in that division does.
They're playing for a job, but it's not pressure.
Every other quarterback in that division does, right? Carson Wentz has pressure. Daniel Jones has pressure.
Big time pressure.
Dak Prescott. Like, it is hard to name quarterbacks that don't some semblance of pressure.
We just went and got you Devontae Adams.
Right.
Derek Carr, you better step up in this tough AFC West.
Sure.
Better step up. 610-632-0975. Kevin might give us a show tomorrow. I don't know.
So Booney checks in with me.
What does Booney say?
Fields does have pressure with him being a first round pick. And normally I would agree. You know that I'm a big proponent of starting first round picks almost immediately, unless you've got an Aaron Rodgers situation, right? Mm-hmm. But in this particular case, I don't think he does because they have given
him nothing.
They've given him nothing to work with.
They've gone out of their way almost to give him
stinks.
Nothing. I'm with you on this one. They give him nothing. Joe in Northeast Philly next on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia. Joe, how are you?
Hey, Devon, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Did you hear what Jason Stark had to say about the center field position?
Yeah, and I was hearing some of those names you were throwing out, and I agree with that other guy that texted in about, getting a center fielder that can hit and play defense.
Uh-huh.
All those guys that you mentioned, they have no stick. I mean, Mariznick has been in the league a long time. He started out with the Marlins. He's a great center fielder. And we're all at any outfield position he can play, but he can't hit. I was a big fan of Roman Quinn. So if you're just worrying about the defensive part, Roman Quinn could have gave you that. And a few months ago I called and Tyrone and all were putting me down about, this is what I said about Roman Quinn. You get a guy, Juan Pierre, who has affiliation with Dombrowski, all right? Mm-hmm. You bring him in, and I know they got guys that can teach bunting and all, but there was nobody better in the modern era than Juan Pierre.
He was tremendous.
Right? And so if this kid's, again, Quinn has to want to do it too. But, he won a couple games for us with his speed and his arm during this season. So, you know, I think they should have just, gave him the free reign, the play defense, to go out there and like I said, spend some money, get Pierre in here to work with him on the side. And because I think the guy's a talent. I know I don't think he's hooked on with anybody. He's supposedly a free agent, isn't he?
Roman Quinn?
Yeah.
I thought he was with Tampa. I thought he was with the Rays.
Oh, he's Tampa? Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, and they got, you know, Kiermaier in center field. But what would you think about this? Now, the fact that the Mets have put all that money in, you know, they went away.
And by the way, Kiermaier's out for the season, Joe.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Would you think that the Mets would be interested? Their catcher, McCann, that they, you know, paid a free agent, he's out injured. And they're going with Nito. And they're talking about, I watched a game the other night where they have this guy Alvarez that's hitting very well in the Triple A. Would the Mets make a trade, giving us Nimmo for Realmuto?
I doubt it. Just because, okay. You know, you look at it, Joe, why are they going to try to help the Phillies out right now? While they may not be a threat to catch them this year, they may have to face them potentially in the postseason. Why would they do something like that to help the Phillies out? So I would say no.
Okay, because, you know, going up against whoever, the Dodgers, or, going into the postseason, you know, to have, a big upgrade like that, because the New York people are talking now that the Mets aren't hitting the ball as well now. You know, it's still Lindor and Alonso. You know, I've been watching some of their games there, and they're the ones that are really carrying the offense still. And that's what I was, you know, plus we get out of that contract, all that big money with Realmuto too, you know? And then another move, how they could get better. I don't know why they don't trade Hoskins. You know, Gerrit Cole, I'm going to say he's going to be an everyday player, but you could platoon him at first. You could either bring in Castellanos to play first, or Schwarber against the left-handed pitchers, or you could even move Baum over there and then bring in Munoz to play third. This is just against the left-handers, and let Hall play specifically against the right-handers, you know, and Hoskins go out to try to get you a pitcher.
Gotcha.
You know, for that starting rotation.
Joe, but great stuff, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for the phone call, man.
Right,
thank you. You got
all
it,
right.
Man. You as well. And go ahead.
What? Just what?
Go ahead.
What? So, hold on. I gotta, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be crass or rude, but you want to trade the best defensive catcher in baseball for a backup catcher. You're moving Rhys Hoskins for what precisely? And then your offense is worse than it is right now with Hoskins not particularly hitting, because you at least with Hoskins have Hoskins in the lineup when that upswing does re-emerge. Listen, you know me. I've been on the trade Rhys Hoskins train for years. Not this year.
We talked about it yesterday. Not this year.
This year doesn't make sense. If you wanted to move him 2 years ago, I get it. If you wanted to move him last year, I get it. If you want to move him in the offseason and figure something out where you do move Boehm to first and you go get a premier third baseman with the money, with Didi's money coming off the books and Gibson's money and all the relievers' money that's coming off the books, totally fine. This is not the year to trade Rhys Hoskins.
You got it. Corey in North Carolina next. Also wants to talk about the center field position for the Phillies next on 97.5 and NBC Sports Philadelphia. Corey.
Yeah, how you guys going, man?
Good, man.
Hold on, I gotta,
I'm sorry.
What's the question?
There's a lot of background noise going on. It's hard to hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you can help us out there, that'd be great. Got it? All good? No? Okay. Well, listen, man, hang on for us, and we try to clear that up. And you know what? Bob, Rob, Corey, we'll get back to you when we get back. And Joe, we'll get to you all, 610-632-0975. We also have to tell you what Doc Rivers had to say about James Harden rejoining the Philadelphia 76ers, re-signing there with the team. We'll get into it all. 610-632-0975. Also, final segment, we'll get the leftovers from Tyler Zuli as we hang out with you until then. Talking some birds, mixing in some Phillies great stuff from Jason Stark. A lot of people don't seem happy about the center field situation there, where you're not getting necessarily a bat, you're getting more of a defensive presence because they feel like they have enough offense. We'll talk about it all with you, with Corey, Bob, Rob, Joe, everybody there. 610-632-0975. It's the afternoon show, 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports, Philadelphia.
97.5 The Fanatic. 97.5 The Fanatic.
Our Twitter poll, we have to get the update. Final poll numbers are powered by Paul B. Moyer & Sons in Doylestown, PA. Men, it's almost mower time before you crack open a cold one and obsessively manicure your lawn. Schedule mower maintenance at poweredbymoyer.com. Now, as we listen to the horns and get ready for the horns, for the final Twitter poll update, has it, I guess, just stayed steady.
Yeah, it's not particularly moved.
It's not moving? Okay.
So the question was, do you 100% feel comfortable with Nick Sirianni as the Eagles head coach heading into the 2022 season? A little over 400 votes. You have approximately 6 minutes left to vote on this thing because I don't know how to do math and time. But 61% of the people say yes. They do have full confidence in him. 34% say not yet, but they need to see a little bit more. Just 5% say no.
Okay. All right, 6 minutes, Dougie Fresh, you're on. On. There you go. All right, it's the hip-hop quote of the day. There you go. Doc Rivers, before we get to Corey, Doc Rivers says in the press release from the Sixers, I couldn't be happier with James's decision to commit to our organization. Over the last 2 years, we have taken major steps toward our ultimate goal of becoming champions. Said 76ers head coach Doc Rivers, James shares our drive to win a title, and he believes being a 76er gives him the best opportunity to do that. Together, we will work tirelessly to achieve our goal. End quote. That is Doc Rivers. After the Sixers make it official, James Harden back in the mix. I also think James Harden would be happy with the decision to come back if they have better play calls.
I think you're probably right. Like,
I'm just saying.
We've talked about that before.
I'm just saying.
Listen, you
I'm
can.
I'm only saying.
You can just say.
And I'm just saying.
I'll expound upon it because you're right. We talked about it before. When did we feel like it looked the best? The first, like, four games?
The freestyle.
It was freestyle.
Freestyle.
Just go out there and make plays. I don't think he liked the schemes too much. And listen, I'm not going to sit here and say he needs to be the 100% decision maker in the schemes, because that's why you have a coaching staff. But he's not, I mean, I don't think you're wrong in that regard.
How about this? I know I'm not wrong.
Just saying.
I'm only saying that I'm just saying. That's it. That's all you get. 610-632-0975. I am just saying. Rob, hang on, we'll get to you. Corey in North Carolina got all that squared away. Corey, welcome back.
What's going on, fellas?
What's happening, man?
Yeah, I was just wondering, you were talking about the center field position.
Yes, sir.
And I was saying, why would you want a 200-hitter? And you say maybe, you know, he might be a good defensive player. I'm saying don't Abdul Herrera giving us a little bit of both of that. I mean,
nah.
I don't understand why we're giving up on him anyway. I mean, this guy was just an all-star a couple years ago.
Yeah, a couple years ago, and since then he hasn't been the same. And it's just not the same. It's time to improve that position at this point.
You can't improve with none of the players you named, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think defensively they'll be fine. They'll be more steady there. They'll feel more comfortable with their defensive presence there.
I mean, wouldn't it be good?
If the focus is what Jason is talking about, just simply being a glove, not necessarily worrying about the bat, clearly they feel like, Corey, they're upgrading that position.
Oh, man. I mean, even with Platoon and Herrera and Verling?
Yeah.
Okay. And one more thing I wanted to address. I definitely think Jalen Hurts has a lot of pressure on him.
Right there, we agree.
You know, we got maybe the best offensive line in football. They went out and got A.J. Brown with a couple more good receivers we got. He got to produce this year.
No, he does.
I think he really will come through. He came through at every other level, you know.
Well, listen, man, I thank you for the call again, Corey. Appreciate you hanging on through the break. He does have the pressure. I think that's evident. We know it, and we'll see how he responds to the pressure. He's pretty good at stuff like that, again. And he knows it's there just like everyone else knows it's there. That's why you have A.J. Brown coming in with the Hurts season hat. You have Nick Sirianni with the shirt. The pressure is there. We all know it. We all see it. Kev, sorry, man. It's there. And he just has to come in and perform. Talking about Jalen Hurts and the pressures, Rob in New Jersey joining us next on 97.5 and NBC Sports Philadelphia. How you doing, Rob?
Good. How you doing?
Pretty good.
It's my first time calling in the station, so thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. There's a couple questions I want to ask. Everybody, you know, is banking on Jalen Hurts supposed to play better and so forth. But my thing is, do you think he's going to bounce the way McNabb did when he first started in the Eagles and everybody doubted him to become a great player that he is now?
But there's a little bit of difference because, Rob, you're talking about the number two overall pick and those expectations being there and why he got off to that, somewhat slow start in the very beginning. He bounced back and became the franchise's best quarterback of all time. So a little bit different there. And I don't know. He was able to do things without Terrell Owens where he had mediocre wide receivers, but he had a good running game, a great offensive line, and the defense was tremendous. Can Jalen Hurts still come out there and show enough where maybe he doesn't put up those numbers like we talk about with those other quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, but goes out there and still gets and delivers the W for the team where he was a plus, maybe not to the level of those players, but the plus type of quarterback that they need to win the games and ultimately win. If he's that, maybe they'll consider keeping him for another year and even going forward.
That is true, but at the same token, with McNabb and so forth, you had an experienced head coach.
Yes, you did.
Big Red. With Nick Sirianni, this is his, second year as a full-time, head coach,
Now, real fast, here's the thing about Andy Reid. He was an experienced head coach once they got going. If you remember, he got there, the same year, the year before Donovan McNabb? The year before Donovan McNabb. So how much was experience did he have? He didn't.
Until his players make him look good.
Yeah, right. And he looked good and made the players look good, too, by putting them in positions to succeed.
Now, do you think Sirianni is going to be the same way?
I don't know. Right now, again, year one, he makes the playoffs. I didn't expect that, Rob. I don't know about you.
But I honestly didn't either. Well, I gave us an 8-9 season.
And I thought they would be 7-10 with their 17 game schedule.
And then this year, I'm looking at maybe 10 wins, despite their players.
I think at minimum they get 10.
Right, because the only thing that's going to keep us in the loop is our defense because, we do have a Reggie White 2.0 now, in my opinion.
Who's
the name of the player that we drafted this year?
Jordan Davis?
Yeah.
Well, that would be more Jerome Brown because he's in the middle. He's a defensive tackle, not an edge rusher.
Well, either way you look at it, we do have somebody who's a great player of a 2.0 because, defense was kind of soft last year.
Well, the defense is going to be good, but if you, I don't know if you heard Tim McManus, Rob, and thanks for the call, man. Tim talked about the passing game being more on display, the passing game again this season because of A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. Those are your best players on the offensive side, not named the offensive line. Those are your best players. And with those guys being the best players, you have to find ways to get them the football. And that's what we're going to see. A lot of passing there from Jalen Hurts. So that pressure will be there. And Nick Sirianni, again, to answer that question, I don't know. But he did win last year, getting to the playoffs, and he has the backing from his team. Lamp is in Ohio. Love that name, Lamp. What's going on? Welcome to 97.5 and NBC Sports Philadelphia.
Thank you much, gentlemen. First time caller. I am from Ohio, but I grew up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, so I love Philly sports.
Okay.
Except for the Eagles.
Whoa, so does that mean Steelers for you?
No. I'm a Cowboy.
Cowboy fan. All right. I mean, you just skipped over a whole lot of teams right in that area. Even if you wanted to go Eagles, you could have gone with the Steelers, and when you got to Ohio, you could have gone with any of those two teams.
Well, what it was is the Cowboys were the first team I saw on TV.
Oh, that excuse.
Yeah. So it's stuck with me. But as far as the Flyers, Sixers, and Phillies, I'm all with it.
All right.
All with it.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Well, what I'm calling for today is, and a gentleman, just a couple callers before me mentioned it too, man. Are they going to trade Odubel? It seems like they put him on ice, and I just don't understand. What's going on there? Do you think he's on the trade block?
Well, I think he's on the block to be to be improved over, where they try to improve that position. I don't know if they trade him. I don't know if he remains here and they decide to do something else with him. I have no idea, but they're clearly trying to improve that position over him, Vierling, and Moniak. They don't see it working with any of those three.
Well, I just know, like, it seems to me, I didn't get to see the game today. I do see most of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, and he did play today, but before today, it's like he's disappeared. Like, he's not even getting an opportunity. It's been Vierling, basically.
Because I think they feel like they've seen, after the All-Star year, they've seen enough of Odubel Herrera. They have an answer of what type of player he is, and they may be trying to see what Vierling is. They tried Moniak, and now they've made the decision, at least based on the reporting of Jason Stark, where they're trying to find a glove in center field to be out there every day. And yeah, they'll platoon and maybe have Vierling in there from time to time, but they're looking to improve that position overall, including Odubel Herrera. They've seen enough.
All right. Well, I guess, man. I was just wondering. I've been a little disappointed because even though the glove is a little suspect, at one point, he was hitting .280, and that's when they began to set him down. You know, and I couldn't understand it, but I hear what you're saying, though.
Well, it seems like that's a couple there we've had of Odubel supporters there.
Yeah, most definitely. And I hate to see him go somewhere else and shine, you know.
Well, I think they have their answer already. Lamb, thanks so much. Listening all the way from Ohio, even with your Cowboy love, man. We appreciate the phone call. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks so much, man. And Ty, have you heard this many Odubel Herrera supporters?
No, I have not. No, wow. I will bet you a large sum of money. Whatever you consider a large sum of money.
Not my billion.
Not your billion.
Not my billion.
We'll fictitiously put on the deal that I'm about to make you,
yeah.
I will bet you whatever you believe to be a large sum of money that he is not a Philly next season.
Is he a Philly next week?
Yeah, probably. I don't expect anybody to make a trade for him.
Okay.
I think so.
Do they let him go?
What do you mean?
Vierling is your backup going forward and whoever the center fielder
what do you
is
mean,
via
they,
trade.
Do they DFA him?
Yeah.
If they bring a guy in, it's a potential possibility. It wouldn't shock me if they bring a center field or an outfielder in. It wouldn't shock me if they DFA him.
Okay, you got it. All right, Rob and Bob, we'll try to get you in on the other side. Hang tight. We have our final segment. Tyler's going to give us our leftovers. Try to squeeze you in. If not, D-Line will join the station at 6 o'clock. She'll have you covered from 6 to 10 tonight here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Final break, 97.5 The Fanatic, the afternoon show, NBC Sports Philadelphia. 5:46, that's the music. That means it's time for the leftovers with Tyler Zuli here on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia. Let's see what we may have missed.
Yeah, so you know how teams are often saying, oh, we have a family here. This is a family. You know, our roster's a bunch. We love each other. We're brothers, right? Well, the Milwaukee Bucks, I think, are actually trying to make that a real thing as the Wisconsin Herd, who, of course, are the G League affiliate of the Milwaukee Bucks, have acquired Alex Antetokounmpo via a trade on Monday, putting the youngest brother in the same organization as his brothers Giannis and Thanasis. He appeared in 15 games for the Raptors 905 last year, averaging just under 3 points and 1.3 rebounds on 7 minutes per game. He's not made his NBA debut yet, but he was with his older brothers in the 2022 All-Star Skills Challenge back in Cleveland. So it seems like the Bucks are just trying to make the Antetokounmpo team.
Well, when you have arguably, for a lot of people, the best player in the NBA.
I don't even know if it's arguably anymore.
The man of Wisconsin, right? And Giannis Antetokounmpo, that you do whatever. I mean, look at Thanasis. Thanasis doesn't make a lot of money on the roster, but he makes money. Every year, he has a roster spot. He gets to stand up there and be annoying and be the towel waiver
that
he is.
Player.
He's so annoying. And then you have the other brother who played for the Lakers, won a title in the bubble with the Lakers. You do whatever Giannis says. You just do it. And I don't blame them for continuing to make their best player happy. Bring all the brothers in. All of them. All of them. Sign his son.
How many Antetokounmpo brothers are there?
I think there's four.
Is it four?
Yeah, I think it's four.
All right.
They have a movie out. You see a movie?
No.
I haven't seen it either.
I was going to say, is it any good?
I think it's called Risen or something like that.
Okay.
But... yeah, but the movie's out. Disney, I think it's the Disney movie.
Disney movie.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to golf as the LIV Golf League that we've heard so much about. They're just poaching some of the PGA's top talent and throwing ridiculous amounts of money at them. Said that next year they're going to expand to 14 tournaments with 48 players competing on 12 established team franchises for, get this, $405 million. In purse prizes. So obviously we know this year it debuted with 8 tournaments and had an increase of a league number of $350-ish million, which means it's going to get $150 million increase in 2023. Now, so the dates and sites of the 14 events in the 2023 league are not announced, but the organization said that it is expected to expand its global footprint. And they did add that it wouldn't conflict with the 4 majors, international team events, or heritage tournaments. So, quote, the best players in the game will always be able to make their own choices about where they want to play.
They got a lot of money, apparently.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. A lot of money. 15 tournaments, you say? Wow.
14, yes.
14 tournaments overall. Okay. A lot of money.
By the way, the PGA Tour Commissioner, Jay Monahan, has already suspended more than 24 players for competing in the LIV Golf events without conflicting event releases, and a handful of players, including a couple of big names, have resigned from the PGA Tour because of it.
Really?
Yes. Huh.
They're trying to steal Charles Barkley, too.
Yeah. By the way, those big names, Patrick Reed and Sergio Garcia.
Really? Okay. All right. Got next.
We'll move on if I can, you know, get these papers to...
That's all right.
...not stick together anymore.
That's all right.
Do you know the name Drew Jones?
Drew Jones. Yes.
Of course. Number 2 overall pick in this year's Major League Baseball
draft. Andrew Jones' son.
Andrew Jones' son left his first batting practice with the Arizona Diamondbacks because of an injury to his shoulder. Now, it's immediately not clear how serious the injury is, but if he does require surgery, he is going to miss the remainder of the season. So Jones agreed to his deal with Arizona that gave him a bonus slot of just under $8.2 million.
I like it.
As the second number 2 overall pick. He slots as the 24th player in the minor league top 100 without actually ever seeing the field. But it remains to be seen if he's actually going to play due to the shoulder injury.
It's minor. He'll be all right. No problems. It's okay.
You think?
I hope so.
You think?
I'm glad he signed his deal, though, before all of this happened.
Yes.
Got that money.
One more story here. How about this one? Neymar, who the Brazilian forward plays for Barcelona, of course, is going to go on trial in October 17th, for that matter.
What?
For fraud and corruption charges over his transfer to Barcelona back in 2013. Mm. He, his father, his mother, and the family company NNN have also been charged in the case, along with former Santos manager Odilio Rodriguez and Sandro Rosell, the then president and vice president of Barcelona, respectively. Now, the case stems from a complaint by DIS, which owned part of Neymar's transfer rights and alleged that it received less money than it was entitled to when Neymar was transferred to Barcelona.
Ah, money. They needed money. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, money. It always comes back to money. Like our $1 billion that we're going to win.
You're going to win it. We'll win it.
We'll win it.
We'll give Jason some money.
Yeah, we'll buy him a nice gift.
We'll give our people some money.
There you go.
And
you're going to go buy your island and disappear.
See ya.
All right.
And that is, Devon, what we have for our leftovers for Wednesday afternoon.
Appreciate that, Tyler Zuli. Thank you. We got to thank everybody for listening. Of course, as always, thank you, Tyler Zuli. Thank you, Haley Taylor, helping us out as well. Booney stepping in after the Phillies game. We appreciate it. And the staff at back there. Tim McManus, Jason Stark as well. We'll come back tomorrow. We'll be with you at 2 o'clock. And family game day, right? Right, Tyler? Family game day
yes.
tomorrow?
Yep.
There you go. There you go. And Jeopardy. You see this official? You see this official?
No, what happened?
Mayim Bialik and...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Ken Jennings, the permanent host.
Kind of figured that would
of Jeopardy going forward. And we also have to let you know about FanFest. We got to tell you, Saturday, October 1st, from 1 to 5 at Xfinity Live. Must be 21 to enter. Stay tuned to The Fanatic for updates on special guests, events, and all the fun for that day. And the presenting sponsor is
FanDuel Sportsbook. Once again, and by the way, Devon, if you're looking for tickets, tomorrow will be a great opportunity.
What's up?
With our family game day.
Oh, yeah.
We got five pairs. 6, 10, 15, who knows?
However generous we feel, we'll give them away.
Won't be video game songs, I promise.
Won't be. Okay, cool. Maybe not Jeopardy either. Coming up next on the radio side, we do have D Lineup, so stick around. Rob, Bob, Allen, thank you all for calling. Hopefully you can hang on for D. She'll be up at 6 o'clock. And on the television side, we will have Birds Huddle as they break down day one of training camp for the Philadelphia Eagles. No pressure on Jalen Hurts, though. Come on, Kev. There's a lot of pressure. All right, we'll be back tomorrow at 2 o'clock right here, 97.5 in NBC Sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' on You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.